Welcome everybody to Film Vault. That's Anderson. I'm Brian Bishop. We're your hosts for today. Oh, what have we been calling this episode? I said top five fictional hit songs from movies, but Anderson, we're gonna have to do a lot of explaining this week.
Yeah, I have no idea if mine are even gonna fit your criteria. Let me just let the listener know. Mm-hmm. I was on the couch with the wife when you called. You're cutting into like my precious 30 minutes with the wife that I get a day. 30 minutes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So I said, hold on, honey, and I got off her. That's crude and not true. We were watching TV.
She roll her eyes?
And then Brian and I continued to talk for 15 minutes trying to figure out what exactly this episode is. And I think I guess it's just music performances within a movie would work, right? If you see them playing the actual instruments and singing and it's an actual song. Does that work?
Absolutely.
But it can't be a biopic. It can't be like Roy Orbison up there.
Yeah, it can't be Ray Charles singing Georgia, Sweet Georgia.
That's its own thing.
Sweet Georgia Brown.
And it can't be musical numbers. It can't be like Grease Lightning. It's not going to be in there.
Yes, that's exactly right. The Moulin Rouge, you know, singing a song to the heavens, that doesn't
Thank
work.
Thank God. Well, that wouldn't work anyways on a list. It would just be stupid.
Good point.
Be very dumb.
This actually came up on the old Adam Carolla show.
Oh, what? Huh?
Carolla was he theorized that... That Thing You Do was the best hit song for a movie where the song had to be a hit in the movie. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, well, that got me thinking. And I was like, we spent 2 minutes on the subject. And I was like, we need to have a whole film vault about this.
Okay. Well, you might take exception to like one or two of mine, but whatever. Like, these are five songs that I have on my list today that either I would have blaring in my car without any shame, or I already do.
I totally agree with you. These are songs that I... already have some, and some I enjoy. I enjoyed listening to all week long.
I'm not picking songs because I think they're key. Kitschy.
They're not kitschy.
They're catchy songs. All of them are catchy songs, mm-hmm. with the exception of one. Not everyone might find so catchy. I do though.
You're number one or one of them.
Number five. But we're going to be hearing these a little bit.
There will be high controversy on my list with one of my choices. You will have to either get on board or deny.
Okay, well, you know what? This is not one of my go-to episodes. It's not my wheelhouse.
I'm excited for this episode. I want to hear your choices. Mm-hmm. I want to hear the listener's choice. I want to at least hear what they are.
Before we go any further, I'd like to throw a call to action.
Let's hear it.
If you fancy yourself a storyboard artist or you'd like to become a storyboard artist and you're an artist of sorts and you mess around, I am looking for one.
Oh.
I need one. For not only to help me with the next thing, my next project, but I plan on showing this thing just as an idea, proof of concept, at the Cold Cockle Festival, which I'll be having in September, September 26th.
You got a place date?
Secured. Yeah, I don't have any places where you can secure your tickets yet. That's coming next. But I'm going to show all the shorts that I shot last year.
They're all be
as
done.
As well as some other things. Yeah, I need a deadline. This is the wife's idea. She's like, put together some kind of event so that you have your own deadline, so you have to be done. Otherwise, you're going to toil with these things for fucking ever.
Anderson Festival.
Because you're an OCD. Yeah, I'm going to have awards.
Anderson Festival. Oh, you're so self-aggrandizing.
But no, I'm not at all. But it's going to be a lot of fun, and part of it is going to be to raise A, to give myself a deadline so I finish these fuckers, B, figure out which ones I should submit to festivals because I've only done one, and C, to help raise a little bit of revenue for the next one, which I really want to shoot, and I need a storyboard artist to help me put some stuff together. So I think it'd be a lot of fun.
Excellent. You know, we have artists, listeners submit artwork, and people are very talented. We have some amazing artwork.
It'd be great if you live in the greater LA area. We could actually, you know, get together, talk face to face. But if not, if you live in Michigan or something, or God forbid, like the
Nebraska, right? Your least favorite place in the world.
I was going to say Eastern Europe. Okay. I was going to say Eastern Europe.
Sorry.
But yeah, please just email me over at AndersonCowan.com, contact@AndersonCowan.com, and let's talk about some storyboards.
These kinds of things can be done all over the internet these days. You can send emails back and forth.
Also,
share documents on Google.
I have a quick question for
Dropbox,
you.
Dropbox, what?
A listener sent me an email.
Okay.
Well, something like this.
Was this email you were reading to me earlier?
No, that was a different one.
It was a very hateful email.
I'll just say the listener's name is Lou. That's all I'm going to leave it at that. Mm. He says...
Sweet Lou?
It was short and sweet. He says, I don't know why I try to send Bald Brian anything because I never know if he received it.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, Lou, what'd you send me?
Can you ask him if he received the Dr. Drew BET canvas I sent him?
BET canvas?
I don't know what the fuck that means. Apparently
not. Did he send it to the studio?
Sorry, Lou. Sounds like the answer is no.
Lou, all I will say is that stuff that gets sent to the studio goes to a P.O. box first, and there's so much stuff that gets sent, a lot of it, most of it, vast majority for Adam, that eventually stuff does trickle down to me that's meant for me, so I'll probably get it at some point, but if there's a note inside, I'll always email it back and say thanks. Appreciate it.
All right.
If.
So Adam gets like first choice. They're like, hey, Adam, do you want this Dr. Drew BET canvas?
Imagine imagine a pallet of stuff comes in.
I look good over my fire.
90% of it's for one guy. You know what it is when you check your P.O. box.
Let's flick fast and let's try and use brevity as the basis.
Yeah, we got some songs. High controversy.
Whoa.
High controversy.
Settle down.
High controversy, my number one. You may not allow it. You may disqualify.
You know what? I was actually doing a little research within the film vault. I went back to our top five movie bands.
Oh, really? I left a couple off that were banned.
Settle down.
I left a couple off that were banned.
And movie bands, like musical bands.
Oh, bands. Sorry, we did movies.
January 2014.
We did.
14, we did an episode, movie bands.
Top
so I listened,
movie band. Movie
I
kind
of slipped around through that to hear to make sure that my actual hard list was the same as what I, because sometimes I make last minute changes.
Right.
Anyways, long story short, I got to rehear, because I heard it the first time when I actually did the show with you. But your number one was from the Muppet Movie, which is a movie that has been banned.
Electric Mayhem.
Yeah, so that's you can't get more controversial than that.
What is this here? Rainbow Connection, not on the list.
And you think you're so clever. You're like, it's not a movie, it's the band in the movie. That's the entire movie, banned.
Other criteria, Anderson. I actually looked through the top five bands as well as top five funniest musical moments. A good episode with Ricky Lindholm. Did not include any from top five musical moments to funniest, and did not include any from top five bands.
Yeah,
Try to get diversity.
Same thing.
Turns out there's a lot of musical acts in movies.
Yeah, movies.
Fake musical acts.
Movies. Music is everywhere.
Fake musical acts.
Music is everywhere. You know, it kind of holds supremacy with the fact that it's in your car. It's it's on, in the bathroom. It's in every movie you see. There's some very rarely do you see a movie with zero music, and a lot of time they actually have somebody performing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, back in the day, man. You couldn't see a movie without somebody like breaking out a jig.
Like on the beach or just all of a sudden they're playing Rock Around the Clock. Like all of a sudden they're playing some Beach Blanket song.
Let's all be very happy that those days are behind us and we can watch movies made for men and adults now. Now, speaking
songs,
of which.
Great songs on
Flick Fashion.
Flick Fashion.
I saw three films since
these are not movies for men. These are not, well, most of mine are not movies for men.
Mm-hmm.
Anderson.
Go ahead.
Me first.
Go ahead.
I saw my number one most anticipated movie from Sundance. You alluded to it last week. Live from New York.
Uh-huh.
Finally saw it.
Yeah, that's for a man.
That's for a man. That's the one movie that's my manly
moment. A man could enjoy a little SNL documentary. So you're a giant fan.
I'm a nerd. I'm an SNL nerd.
Okay.
So, Live from New York.
Yes.
Directed by Bao... How do you pronounce N-G-U-Y-E-N? Nguyen?
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 Nguyen.
Nguyen. Bao Nguyen. This is a documentary. It's about the social impact and the cultural relevancy of Saturday Night Live. Mm-hmm. They sort of... Okay. I was initially frustrated, but then I appreciated later that they sort of picked a path for this documentary, because doing a doc about SNL is a far, far wide-reaching task, and it would have given short shrift to a lot of things. And by picking a path, the cultural impact, the relevancy, the timeliness, all that stuff, political, cultural, they for example, they completely ignored like almost the entire Adam Sandler era of SNL.
Oh, that's my era.
I agree. I loved it. And I watched it all throughout whatever it was, high school or whatever. But not a lot of cultural relevancy. Not a lot of political talk in that time. There's a little bit of Bill Clinton here and there.
I would assume that there's a lot of like the early stuff with the Blues Brothers and Belushi.
No Blues Brothers. It was more political. It was more, they talked a lot about... how they open a lot of doors for women. The women were an important part of the cast, and then they kind of dipped down.
Especially black women.
We're not an important part of the cast, and they addressed that, the black actress or black cast member controversy, and they came back around to how the women are more important now. And minorities, how about Garrett Morris early on, and how he represented all black people on
that
show.
So this is like a movie made for like festivals.
It is, and that's my one criticism, is I don't know how much I don't know how much you're going to enjoy this.
No, I won't.
You might, because there's a lot of great clips. There's still great clips. There's a lot of great George W. Bush and Al Gore and, you know, Clinton and all that stuff.
I try SNL. I don't dislike it, and I think sometimes it's great. And the wife and I do watch it on a... we were watching on a pretty good clip there. But I can tell you this. every 4 years, it gets real fun, real fun.
With presidential races and stuff.
It really amps up for that. And if you're following the races, which most of us do because it's entertaining, and then you see their take on it, it's usually very well done.
That's funny you mentioned that, because they spent a lot of time talking, bringing it back to the women in the roles and the cast. They talked about a lot of Sarah Palin stuff, how that was influenced the election, they claim, and I agree with them, or at least impacted the society's sort of view of her. And then they also talked about... oh, wait, I lost my train of thought.
It's okay.
No, you're talking about election. No, election
every 4 years. And
shit.
That they do a good job at satirizing.
Yeah, you're right.
The elections.
I lost my train of thought.
People, it's all right, buddy.
That's right. They talked about 9/11. A lot of recent. Oh, what I was going to say. A lot of recent stuff.
Are you back
9/11.
On track? Is this
a lot
from
of
the track?
Stuff,
the
train 9/11. Of thought? It was actually got a little dusty in the theater when they started the 9/11
really?
Stuff. Yeah, because it was a touching moment when they came back after being off for a little while.
A tough day. They had a tall order there. How do
they
you,
did.
How do you deal? I don't know, for whatever reason.
Because they're so New York.
Maybe they covered that in the 40th anniversary episode, which I watched.
Did.
But yeah, I feel like I saw that recently. I feel like this documentary did not need to be made, because it seems that SNL is constantly celebrating some kind of 25-year anniversary, 15-year anniversary. I mean, when I worked at the video store, we had two or three anniversary SNL episode shows that are each like 90 minutes long. Yeah. So,
and then so many times you get the Bumblebees, for example.
I don't know if this needed to be made.
I will say that they did spend a lot of time in the digital shorts, Andy Samberg and Lazy Sunday and all that stuff, Lonely Island. That was pretty cool. And
which just, they continue
it was
to
nice
try
to see how they evolved. They're continuing to evolve throughout, you know, the technology changes, so the show's changing.
I don't like the new the new digital shorts that they're trying to do without the Lonely Island. It's kind of
The guys,
they're kind of creepy. It's just like they're not getting the funny. They're missing the funny. They're just doing anyways, whatever.
More surreal.
I saw a movie, bro.
Life from New York is solid. It's a must for any fan, but for a casual, it's a solid rental.
Really solid rental.
You're gonna laugh at least half the clips you see. So you will not be.
But you can
it's
see the
a
same
waste.
Thing. You can go out and rent the 40th anniversary if you
it's
miss that.
It's curated.
Is it close to the same?
No, actually, I hated the 40th anniversary show because they did so many. Allow me to wax for a second.
Oh no!
No, sorry. For a second, they. Why was Dan Aykroyd doing Super Bassomatic 76 as like new fat old Dan Aykroyd? Why would you just watch the old clip?
I don't know
why
what
are they doing
about.
Why are they doing new versions of the old sketches, or just doing cover versions of their old sketches? That was a huge waste of time. I would have rather seen the old sketches or crossovers or people doing stuff differently. They just covered their old sketches. It was weird. All right, they didn't do that in this. This was better.
You got to break out the old hits. People expect it. It's like watching the Bee Gees. You don't want to hear the new. I don't know why I use the Bee Gees. Do the Bee Gees still play?
No.
ABBA and the Bee Gees, same band in my head. I don't know much about music.
They're similar, but
same band, same exact band.
Similar.
I saw a film called "The Town That Dreaded Sundown." The Town That Dreaded Sundown, 2014, directed by a man named Alfonso Gomez Rion. Now you might know that name.
Might
sound a little bit familiar because I was just singing his praises last week, I believe. Me and Earl and the Dying Girl.
That's right.
He's the director of that. He's also director of a few other things. One, Red Band Society, which was that TV show about the kids with cancer that I never saw, but he directed one episode of that, American Horror Story. More importantly, Glee. More importantly, another feature film. His first feature film that he directed was this, The Town That Dreaded Sundown, 2014, streaming now on Fuckflix. It is a slasher film, to say the least. I'm not a slasher fan. However, glimpses of genius here. Okay. Now, it's also very interesting in the sense that the original... This is a remake, and that's how you would think that it. If you read it, Saab on Fuckflix, you're like, oh, it's a remake of a 1976.
Was the original called the same thing?
The Town That Dreaded Sundown. I'm not a big slasher guy, and I know there's a lot of these B horror movies that came out in the 70s. This being one of them, The Town That Dreaded Sundown. And the 1976, the little tagline goes like this: the little premise: a Texas Ranger hunts for a hooded serial killer terrorizing the residents of a small town, set in 1946 Arkansas. Loosely based on a true story.
Okay. Loosely.
This remake is, I guess the closest thing I've ever seen to it would be Human Centipede. The second one, how meta it was, because it opens up with Martin is watching, the security guard is watching the original one. This one opens up in a drive-in where they're watching the original 1976 The Town That Dreaded Sundown. In the town where the story was loosely based on.
Sure.
Okay. And the hooded guy is a serial killer, just like you say, and he kills people in very unique ways with like trombones. What are those slide?
It's a slide trombone.
Is my mic cutting
fuzzy,
out to
fuzzy,
everyone or
fuzzy.
Just me?
No, me too.
Are you doing that? Are you sabotaging? Sabotaging?
Denying.
So it goes on and on because that's supposed to be the town where it took place in. And then there's this preacher who, you know, the dad from Beethoven. Or I think it's the dad from, no, Richie Rich. You know, the dad from Richie Rich. He's a character actor.
No. No. He's the dad from Beethoven.
Anthony Anderson is also in this, as well as another actor I can't remember. Okay, I can't recommend this movie. I'm not a big slasher fan.
You went back because you liked Mean Earl and the Mean Girl.
Yeah, I like Rion, what I saw of him just last week. I'm like, I must see something else that this man made. But an original take on redoing an old slasher film, because it was very meta, like I said, and there was definitely glimpses.
Moments of genius.
Moments of absolute genius. And it felt like, you know, like it was like a tryout movie, like a practice movie. It definitely felt like a proof
to us you can make a competent movie and we'll let you make something else.
Felt like a first film for sure. But I'm glad I saw it. I can't highly recommend though at all. 2.5 stars out of 5, if that, maybe 2. I'm just like, I didn't care about the characters, but there was some really great shit to look at. But also some student film stuff where it's like, hey, let's make the camera Dutchy just because, you know, like the camera's going to be askew. Sometimes that works.
You call that over-directing, right?
A little bit. Sometimes, yeah. Like, oh, okay. You're reminding me that you're behind the camera there. Okay. Okay.
We know we're watching a movie.
But some great stuff.
Okay.
There's this one scene in particular where they're following this girl into a building and the music is, it's great. It looks great. Anyways.
Can't wait for the building following girl scene.
What?
You didn't describe the scene. You said they're following a girl into a building. What happens? Don't tell me what happens at the end.
She's at the airport. And she's seeing like her some guy that she really wants to bang, and then go straight to that, to them banging hard on the bed, and you know, a lot of TNA in this movie too.
Yeah.
And the music, but the way that he used it, it was almost I hate to say it, but like it felt like a Tarantino movie.
Okay.
You could see that the kid knows what he's doing.
Speaking of which,
yeah,
I saw a movie by Alfonso Gomez Rayon.
Oh, I'd like to also thank. Oh, I'll get to that later.
Mean Earl the Dying Girl.
Okay, good. I'm glad you saw it. Glad you saw it, because this is perfect. Now we can go right into the next one.
This is his follow-up. Felbart doing his own filmography. This is it. Starring Thomas Mann, Olivia Cooke, Ronald Kyler II. Why aren't you Siler? Why aren't you Ronald Siler Jr.?
Siler.
Connie Britton, Nick Offerman, Molly Shannon. This is set in Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
It is based on the novel...
Andrews.
I think James Andrews. I didn't write it down.
I feel
you described it last week, and I don't want to describe too much more because a lot of it's in the title. I mean, the title kind of sets the whole... We should talk about movies where the premise is the title. Stakes on a Plane, for example. This won the Grand Jury Prize and the Audience Award at Sundance. The script was featured on the 2012 Blacklist. 81% of Rotten Tomatoes. Mm-hmm. Huh. It's like a hipper, more grown-up version of The Fault in Our Stars.
Oh, it's way better than The Fault in Our Stars.
Yeah, hipper and more grown-up. I mean, Fault in Our Stars, I feel like, was made to make 14-year-old girls cry. And this is, I think, made to make 17-year-old boys go like, whoa, that was deep.
No, I don't think so.
It's not bad. I liked it a lot.
It's definitely for like a hipster... movie buff audience. I think that's one of the reasons
liked it. It's very knowing.
To the point of annoyance at times. But
it's a bit precious sometimes.
Let me tell you, it's been a couple weeks since I've seen it now, and I think about this one more than anything I've seen in recent memory. I'm impressed with this
when
looking back at it and thinking about it. Also, you know what? It's so easy to say, and I didn't say it last week. I didn't even say it on the After Disaster when I was talking about it there, because I continue to talk about it. It's my go-to movie to talk about right now. But it's very Michael Gondry, to the point of Fault, but I don't like Michael Gondry films.
Oh.
You know what I mean?
Do you? Let me ask you a question without revealing
anything. That's why I said more Wes Anderson / Noah Baumbach. Can you see that? Like if those two...
Yeah, it has. You're right. You know what? That's a very good observation because there were some very precious moments too cutesy or too winking and patting itself on the back. But at the same time, it was also very heartfelt, very dry sometimes.
He walked the line pretty well, I think.
Yeah, not dry, but wry, I guess is the word I'm trying to say.
I think the best way to describe this movie as far as its tone and what it accomplishes is in this one observation. He has the stereotypical... It's about... What's the main character's name?
Thomas Mann. Oh, shit. I forgot. Thomas Mann is the actor.
What's his name, though? It's a name that you hear 1,000 times when you're watching the goddamn movie. Anyways, his best friend is a black kid. It's a stereotypical best friend.
Yeah.
Which is, we've seen it time and time again in movies, especially teen movies.
His introduction as a little kid is fucking hysterical.
Oh, the black kid?
What's up, cat? You want to fight? Didn't think so, bitch-ass cat.
The black best friend in movies?
Fight with his cat.
The black best friends. I don't remember that.
You don't remember that with a flashback? I've been friends with him since I was 5 years or 12 years old.
I don't remember.
They flash back to Earl walking into his house and he sees his cat. Like, what's up, cat? You want to fight? Didn't think so, bitch ass cat.
I don't remember that.
He fucking tries to pick a fight.
So
with
here's
his cat.
Here's the what I'm trying to get at is that they have the stereotypical best friend who's black, which we've seen in numerous teen movies, mm-hmm. right? Usually that black friend is very gentrified. He's very, very has white qualities.
As lampooned in Not Another Teen Movie, which I think I made you watch.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But not so here. I mean, this kid is a thug.
It is subverted.
And honest, and I love it. And they do make a realistic reason as to why how these two became friends, and I kind of buy it.
He's pulled out of another movie, but he works.
I love...
A lot of times when you're like, that character's out of another movie, it doesn't work. That character's out of another movie, thank God, because he expands the world beyond this sort of cutesy insular high school thing.
Earl makes this movie for
his
me.
Brother's great.
Without Earl,
his brother's great.
The movie loses a full star rating. You know what I mean?
His
brother's great too.
Punch him in the face.
But there's some really real moments here where you're like, fuck.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It got without revealing anything. It got a little dusty.
Mike Carano, right?
I heard of him.
No, he reminds you of the main character. What is the guy's name? What is the character's name? I must hear.
It's not Riley, is it? No, that's is it?
Why can't you put your own name in your title there, pal? You know, it's me and Earl. Yeah. He doesn't have her name either.
This is the first time.
Dying girl is not really a name. Greg is his fucking name.
Greg,
Rachel, and Earl.
Okay. Let me ask you this. Without revealing anything, I'll simply ask you this question. Was the unreliable narrator unfair? Did it unfairly manipulate the audience? Was it cheating?
It was something like I hadn't seen before, and I'm not sure if I liked it or not.
There was misdirection.
I felt like... I think that there's more of that coming from the book than in the movie. It's hard to tell when this thing is based on a book.
That's true.
It almost makes me want to go read the book, though.
This is an example where melodrama is good. Melodrama is almost always bad, sometimes good. And this is a sweeping drama. It's life and death and sickness and health, and it's good. It's
great
a good
performances
movie.
All around, too. And like I said, the difference between this and The Fault in Our Stars. They put like a little air tube in her nose. And in this one, the girl has cancer, they shave her fucking head. Yeah. I mean, they did things more realistically. And for that, I thank you.
Yeah, it's a really good movie. I really enjoyed Mean Earl and Dying Girl. Check it out.
And all like the animation, there's a lot to like here. If there was, he got great performances all around. And if there was one scene in particular, the uncut scene, the scene that goes on and on, it's one long take.
There's a few long takes in here.
But one of them in particular in her bedroom with kind of the odd angle didn't really work for me. It was one of the only times where I'm like,
drew attention to
look
itself.
It
was a bit Wes Anderson.
Really trying to act hard. You know what I mean? Time where I really felt like the actors might have struggled a little bit.
It's asking a lot of teenagers or younger people to have that long of a scene.
And it reminded me that they were acting. Whereas most of the movie, I was very into the story and the language that was being spoken and their little asides and their little movies that they made.
You know who was out of another movie, quote unquote, in a bad way? Was Nick Offerman's character. And I like Nick Offerman.
He didn't really work for me.
He didn't work. He was too cutesy.
The quirky dad.
Everything he was supposed to be saying was supposed to be quirky.
Yeah.
That was the most standout Wes Anderson-y moment for me was the dad. Was his character trait. He's always eating funny food.
But the teacher, the teacher wiped that performance
was great.
Up. The teacher was great.
He was authentic.
If it wasn't for Earl, the teacher is my next best favorite thing. Yeah. And that's not taking anything away from Greg or Rachel. They were both great, too. Really great performances and great characters all around. Love
Molly
it.
Shannon character.
This is a movie you're going to like. Molly Shannon was
subtly sweet.
But she's hard not to be Molly. It's hard for her not to be Molly Shannon. She played the stereotypical drunk mom with the wine in her hand.
Well,
always.
She was self-medicating.
Self-medicating and not processing problems.
You only meet her after the daughter is diagnosed with cancer.
The
daughter after she's diagnosed with cancer.
Speaking of what? What were we speaking of? Oh, we're speaking
of little girls.
Wes Anderson and... the hotel movie that everyone loved except for us.
Royal Budapest.
Everyone
Grand
loved.
Budapest. Remember? Logan, you love Grand Budapest?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, of course.
Of course. Look at him. Look at him. He's like, I'm wearing pink headphones. What do you think? I wouldn't love...
I'm wearing ironic headphones. Hipster headphones.
So that kid,
pink
assistant?
Pink Beats.
You know his assistant? The little Indian assistant that he has in the movie?
The de facto star of the movie?
With the little...
Yeah.
Stars in a movie that's in theaters now, bro.
Really?
He doesn't star. He's more of a sidekick like you. Movie called Dope.
Interesting.
Dope.
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 I saw Dope.
Dope, yo.
Okay.
It was the darling hit,
yes.
Sundance.
I've been hearing good things.
Which is usually, not, I shouldn't say usually, but quite often makes me kind of go in trepidatiously.
Well, so was Life from New York. And wait, wasn't Me Earl and the Dying Girl. Sorry, Me Earl and the Dying Girl is what I meant to say. It won the Sundance Audience Award and the Grand Jury.
So was Happy Texas.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Mm. Ah, Happy Texas is all right.
It doesn't hold up.
Happy Texas never come up on a list.
I was going to say, have you ever brought up Happy Texas?
Not important. What's important? Dope, out in theaters now, directed by a man named Rick Fomayawa.
Ah, Rick.
Rick Fomayawa. He directed a movie called The Woods back in 99. He did My Best Friend's Wedding as well as Brown Sugar. Is that what it's called?
You tell me.
Brown Sugar. I think it was called Brown Sugar. Anyway, this is my first movie I've seen by Rick Fomayawa. And it was actually, it's an interesting backstory. It was produced by Pharrell and Forrest Whitaker. Mm. Pharrell Williams, is that his name?
Yeah.
And they took it around. His movies had, Fomayawa wrote and directed this as well. His movies have turned pretty good profit, actually very good profit. So he shopped this one around and couldn't get any of the studios to finance it. And he kept going. He finally got China to back it. So this is a Chinese-based movie. Now, if we go to war with China soon, seeing this movie will be like going in bed with the enemy.
Yeah, so hurry up.
War, yeah. It's a movie about three black geeks who live in present-day Inglewood. Bleaks? I don't think that's a thing. That might be actually racist.
Really? I'm blurreds.
Malcolm Jibb is his little 14% African-American friend.
14% is awful specific.
Grand Budapest. And Diggy, his little lesbian friend. And they all live in Inglewood in a neighborhood called The Bottom, which is the worst of the worst. Now, those of you who might not be familiar with Southern California, Inglewood, a gnarly neighborhood.
It's a city of champions.
It's where the Forum, the old Great Western Forum is, where the Lakers used to play. It's where one of my favorite places in the world used to be, Hollywood Park. I used to go watch the ponies there and drink all their beers and all their hot dogs and think about Bukowski. I love that place. They ripped it down a couple months ago.
It is sad and a little bit ironic that when you drive through Inglewood, which is a bit dilapidated, I will say,
there are
still banners on the flagpoles saying, on the light poles saying, like, City of Champions, Inglewood. It's like, I don't want to change that.
But these three kids, they're all like in high school, probably like sophomore, younger kids and the second half of high school, your upperclassmen. Oh, they're underclassmen. Is that it?
Yes.
I hated school. Anyways.
They're overclassmen.
They're all obsessed with mid-90s hip-hop, which...
Wait, is this current day or is this taking place in the 90s?
Current day. It's current day, but you want to know from the posters and a lot of the clips because they're all on bikes, they're in a ghetto, and they all have like... He's got like the flat top, you'd see with the Fresh Prince.
Little
and
Kid & Play.
That's it. And they're like crisscross and like it lists the things that they're into. There's narration in the beginning, which I'm fine with. I know a lot of people have problems with voiceover. They think it's lazy, but when it's done right, I really like it. There's something comforting about it. And Forrest Whitaker does it to get us off the bat, to explain who these characters are, where they live and what they do and what their daily routine is like. A lot of world building here. People talk about world building in Mad Max. Like, you get a really good idea of what The Bottom in Inglewood is like for these three characters. And, oh no, train of thought gone. Where'd it go?
What The Bottom is like. You had a really good idea what The Bottom is like for these characters.
Yeah, but there's a Forrest Whitaker is explaining it to us. Also, he's explaining that they don't fit in. They're black, but they're geeks, and they're into things that white people like, such as, and then he starts listing, and he says skateboards, something else. And he says Donald Glover. That was a good reference. That was funny. I don't know if it's going to hold up 5 years from now, 10 years from now. Donald Glover might still be around.
Funny today.
But it's funny. It's funny right now. They're in a band. They're in a punk rock band, these three kids. They're like really tight.
Band called Death.
Band called Oreo. Spelled A-W-R-E-E-O. These are like black hipsters, if you can imagine that. And it's snappy. It's fast-paced. It's good. It feels like quick, like a John Hughes film. I think I've heard people say this is like a black Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Mm-hmm. But it's honest in the sense that it's showing what actually happens in Inglewood, which is people getting killed randomly and stuff. And at times I'm like, I feel like this is trivializing like real fucking issues.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like making jokes of stuff, but it's a black guy who wrote it and directed it. So, you know, I'm so up in my white guilt head half the time. I'm like, I'm not sure. But by the end,
you hate white men with jowls.
By the end, the fun and games, all the fun and games, but it got real before it was all over.
Shit got real.
I can tell you there's two very attractive women in this movie, too.
Ooh, let's hear it.
Zoe Kravitz.
Yeah, Lenny Kravitz's daughter, right?
And Lisa Bonet's.
Oh, you know, she's a vision.
Glorious. Yeah. Beautiful. Holy shit.
Easy, buddy.
And there's another chick that's in it, too, who's half naked throughout. And Blake Anderson's in it from Workaholics. He shows up in the middle of it. this movie feels a little disjointed. It has some tonal issues, but for the most part, I was accepting of them. It turned into a Spike Lee movie at the end where he just starts talking to you and explaining, like almost making me feel even more guilty.
Yeah.
He's like asking me like, you know, so what if I'm black? I'm like, dude, I'm cool with you being black.
Please don't say
I got
that.
No problem.
Don't yell that in this neighborhood.
And Blake Anderson he's comic relief. He plays a drug dealer. But tonal issues. But for the most part, I really did enjoy this movie. Dope. And the three lead characters, very likable. The drug dealer that they get in bed with by mistake, very likable. And they go like, it's essentially like a jungle, like an urban jungle adventure. It's almost like Huck Finn in the ghetto.
Easy.
It kind of feels that way without the racial. Well, actually, there's racial stuff. Not a ton of racial stuff, though.
Are there any white people in this movie?
Yeah, Blake Anderson.
Durs, yeah.
Blake Anderson.
Durs, as they call
it. No, it's not Durs. That's the other guy. It's the guy with the wild, crazy hair.
That's Durs.
No. Come on.
Oh, am I off?
One's name is Anders, and he's like tall and skinny.
Yeah.
And then one has got the crazy hair, and that's Blake Anderson.
God damn, I got that all messed up.
It doesn't matter. It's okay, buddy.
Sorry. Hey, I saw a movie. You know what you done with Dope?
Yeah, Dope. It probably should have ended 20 minutes earlier. It felt like, I'm like, okay, now
it's recommend?
Over.
Do you recommend people
I
see
do.
It?
It's just a little bit all over the place. So it's not, I don't love it. It's a 3.5-star movie for me. I do like it. And I do think that a lot of our listeners will like this movie. It's not run of the mill at all. It has that real independent feel too. Like I love independent cinema from the 90s. Mm-hmm. This feels like there's some real sloppy edits and weird shit that I think he almost put in there on purpose just to kind of give it a more of a...
Like a rough around the edges kind
of
feel.
I feel like he did that. But these three main characters make it definitely worthwhile. There's just so much going on at times. I thought that I'm like, okay, there wraps it up. And then I'm like, oh, wait, no, there's still that other storyline they got to wrap up. So it seems like it was wrapping up for about 30 minutes.
Yeah. I saw a movie. Mm-hmm. I heard you mention this on the After Disaster, so you saw it too. Let's talk about Inside Out. Inside Out.
Oh, no, you already know, though.
I do. Sorry. I heard you you must have intentionally left this off because you figured I had seen it.
No.
You didn't want to talk about it?
No, it's I got it on here.
You were talking about three movies.
I wrote down Inside Out and Lava. That's all I wrote for this one. That's all I wrote, but I can speak about it.
Let me set it up. Inside Out is directed by Pete Docter. This was on my anticipated summer movies. He directed Up and Monsters, Inc. He also wrote the stories of WALL-E and Toy Story. So he's in the Pixar family, right?
Yes.
He's probably a co-director, assistant director, writer on all sorts of things.
A long time.
They also kind of gang write a lot of their stuff. Like, you know,
gang write? That seems really close to something horrible.
We don't talk about that on this show.
We're going to gang write
a different show.
We're going to gang write this thing.
Come on, boys. Let's gang write it.
All right, let's go.
Voiceover.
We'll run a train of thought on it.
Easy. Speaking of train of thought.
Yeah.
Amy Poehler, Phyllis Smith, Bill Hader, Mindy Kaling, and Lewis Black are joy, sadness, fear, disgust, and anger. The emotions in Riley's head.
Before I forget, how much better would Nick Nolte have been?
As anger?
As anger.
I was thinking Adam Carolla.
Fuck yourself. I would like to enjoy this.
You didn't like Lewis Black?
Lewis Black's bullshit anger. I'm so over that. Over it.
Yeah.
He's like,
I was actually surprised it wasn't Gilbert Gottfried.
He makes a living. No, thank God it wasn't the fucking parrot. Come on, Brian. No. I love Gilbert, but no, that's Nick Nolte would be a perfect cantankerous old angry guy.
Yep. Yeah. Crusty.
Crusty.
Yeah.
But that being said, also Bill Hader completely wasted in this movie, and I hated his character. Fear was a total waste of a character.
Yeah, he almost didn't.
All pratfalls. Everything he did was slapsticky.
Yep.
There was way more slapsticky little kid humor in this than most Pixar movies.
Interesting.
A lot more where it was just cheap, dumb laughs, where usually they don't really stoop to the low hanging fruit.
Yeah, I guess so. With Bing Bong. Yeah, Bing Bong was very Jar Jar-ish.
What was the
although
character?
I kind of like Bing Bong. I liked his arc. I like where his story ended.
The little kid next to me. what happened with Bing Bong? I'm not gonna, without getting anything away. It doesn't really fucking matter. Yeah, it's a fucking cartoon for children. Come on.
I feel like you yell at me the second.
All right, but all I'm going to say is what little kid I heard next to me. Bing Bong. Bing Bong was a piece of shit. I did not like Bing Bong.
Bing Bong was all right.
Fucking pink elephant made out of cotton candy. I felt like they could have been more clever. And now we're spoiled.
Interesting.
We're spoiled going into a Pixar movie.
You think it could have been more clever? I thought it was a really clever movie. You think overall?
No, I'm talking about Bing Bong.
Oh, okay.
Bing Bong plays her imaginary friend from childhood.
Yeah, but as the imagination creation of a 4-year-old, maybe that's what Bing Bong would have been.
Okay, this is very similar to me as Monsters, Inc., where I really liked all the stuff with the doors and what they were doing.
Like, I love the world they were running through.
I love the Herman Heads part where like they're in her head, but the stuff where the adventure's going on, I didn't care.
Interesting.
Because I knew. So what happens is sadness.
I agree that I liked the stuff in the head better. And I love when they cut away to the parents and the other people. That was inspiring.
Probably my favorite part. Even though I feel like the dad was, I was really mad when I first saw inside the dad's head. I'm like, come on. They all have mustaches and they're all thinking about sports.
Yeah, but the wives, I was laughing
my balls off by the time that little short period was over. Interesting observation, yes. And I don't want to get hung up on it, but okay, so Joy is the little girl's main character in her head.
She's the de facto main character. She's the driving force in the little girl's head.
And if you notice, when they go in the mom's head and they see her little emotions, you know who was in charge there?
Who?
Sadness.
Really?
Bizarre. Well,
do you think they correspond? Because my thinking is, as a person grows up, they trade out
emotions. They can totally trade out, yeah, for
so
sure.
But why
is the mom depressed? Weird. So Joy and Sadness get flung out of headquarters, out of her brain.
It's an odd couple story.
And they're trying to get back. The rest of the adventure is they're trying to get back into her brain. Otherwise, she's going to be in this depressive state forever, what they're implying.
And it's precipitated by she's 11 years old. The first trauma in her life is her family packing up from Minnesota and moving to San Francisco. And they have a lot of fun with the San Francisco the cliches.
Broccoli on pizza.
Yeah, they have a lot of fun with that.
But so she's left with nothing but anger, fear, and disgust.
Yes.
And I think what they're going for...
No, anger for disgust.
Disgust.
Yeah, you're 5.
I think what they're going for is... And actually, I thought about this after I saw the movie. I'm like, you know what? This isn't like a unique situation in Riley's head. You know, this is adolescence is what... Yeah. So probably everyone has their joy and their depression gets jettisoned out of headquarters, you know, and they're just showing the roller coaster that is adolescence in a different light, which was interesting.
I agree, and I like the message that it sent vis-a-vis the, you know, Sadness didn't feel like she didn't have a place. You know, they kept putting her in a circle, remember? They kept just shoving her aside, and the message at the end was, no, Sadness has a purpose.
All right.
Well, Sadness has a purpose in your life.
Everything has a purpose, Brad.
But for a little kid...
I'm told cockroaches have a purpose.
Oh, there's one right there.
Stop it! What? Brian.
Love
it. But this, you brought this up with other movies. The stakes were very low for me in the sense that I knew Sadness and Joy were going
movie.
To get
back.
There was
forever.
Never any worry that they weren't. So it's just
she's
like, okay.
She's clinically depressed the rest of her life. She's institutionalized at 11 years old.
But that's the problem with the story inherently. You know what I mean? Mm. Why not give me something where like there is a concern that this could happen? You know what I mean? Or if they don't get back in time, that's going to happen. There doesn't seem to be like any real threat. Like I just have to watch them try to cross this bridge, try to catch the train of thought.
You're right. It was much less about the journey and the plot and the driving plot than it was about. I liked a lot of the very inventive touches, a lot of the creative touches. I loved. It's a cliche, but I really do think adults will enjoy this more than kids because there's a lot of stuff that's for adults and kids can't play. For example, when they're demolishing Imagination Land to make room for Preschool Land in the girl's head, that's poignant for an adult. The adult's like, wow, yeah, I totally identify with that. I can see that. Whereas a little kid's not going to know what the fuck that means. Like,
yeah, they might. That's the problem with a lot of Pixar movies. WALL-E was like despised by a lot of little dumb kids because kids are fucking idiots. You know, they don't... But there was a lot of stuff in there for little kids.
There were a few dusty moments.
But like, I never got emotional with this one. Never got emotional. Now, the reason why I brought up Monsters, Inc. is like, I didn't really care about the adventure with that either. And Steve Buscemi, playing the lizard thing. And remember, they're riding the doors like they're on that conveyor belt like you see at a dry cleaner. Monsters, Inc. It was similar. But Monsters, Inc. What I'm saying is this is a middle of the road Pixar movie. It's probably like right around, they made like 16. This is probably like number 8 for me, which...
Huh.
That being said, it's one of the best movies you're going to see all summer by far.
Even if it's number 8 or 9 or 10, it's still an excellent movie.
I just love Pixar so much that unfortunately I kind of pick at them. Now, the short that came on before it, Lava.
Lava's great.
Lava's going to live on in my mind longer than...
I want to download that song.
I have it, and I listen to it often. And the wife and I are very... this is where I would use the word gay if I still used it. Mm. But we tell each other we love each other all the time now. And we chuckle. Get a good chuckle out of
Logan, you want to give those pink headphones to Anderson?
Hey! It's a wife.
It's very sweet.
It was her. She's the one who started.
You guys saw it together?
Yeah, unfortunately, and she's really hard to impress, especially with like kid stuff. So she was kind of given body language, like, all right, I'm done with this. Like, I might have enjoyed it a little bit more if I saw it in an empty theater by myself without all the fucking children.
I was the only solo guy with a bunch of little kids.
And like right off the bat, there's some woman that decides, hey, this is a kid's movie, so I'm going to have my 9 children with me, and then I'm going to just do texting and emailing throughout the movie, and I'm going to keep the screen on as bright as possible. She had a fucking 6, and it was like just
that'll light up the theater,
illuminating our entire section. Huh. And she's sitting right next to the wife, so I'm like leering over across the wife, and Jillian's like just getting, you know, she's getting panicked because she's afraid there's gonna be an altercation because she hates.
She knows that, she senses.
And the wife just turns to me, she goes, "It's a kids' movie. Leave it alone.
Wow,
it's okay. It's
preemptive." Like, she preemptively talked you down.
Just put a dimmer on. Do your little thing because you think you're above the movie, but just don't ruin it for everyone around you. You self-centered see.
I agree.
Fucking whores. And it's not just a woman thing. It's men too. The people are just fucking idiots in theaters.
Yeah, I agree. I actually had to get up and move to the other side of the row because the two girls next to me were just chatting loudly amongst each other. And I was like, no time for this.
Like they think it's a mommy and me screening or something. Yeah. We're not seeing like a rerun of Dark Crystal here, which would have been pretty sweet.
Just scared the kids. Is Dark Crystal scary to kids?
Bing pong. It was scary to me when I was a kid. All right, so yeah, Inside Out. I really love that Lava song.
That's the short, we should point out.
It's a song all about an island in
it's like 4.5 minutes.
Pacific Ocean. It's like right around just under 5, I think. In Pacific Ocean, who sings a song? He sings a song about how he wants there to be another island for him to lava. And it's beautiful.
You want someone to love.
And it gets tragic, and then it's beautiful again. And I've listened to this song numerous times, and I have a dream, Brian. This dream is 5-10 years from now for me to be sitting in a bar somewhere in Hawaii, not thinking about that song at all, having forgotten about it, enjoying like a Mai Tai, and it comes on.
That'd
because
be
it's just one of the Hawaiian songs, one of the go-to Hawaiian songs.
That'd be nice. I'm going to Hawaii in a month and a half. So
fuck yourself. How about that? How about that? I don't want to hear about you being in my dream location.
Coming up next, the top 5 movies that were hits fictionally in songs, movies. You will explain.
Yeah.
Somebody celebrating 4th of July in a very unusual way. Someone purchased a men's USA flag stars and stripes bikini swimsuit for men.
Is it like a swimsuit or are we going with the
I think we're on like
banana
bikini
hammock.
Body, yeah, banana hammock, uh-huh. Bikini bottom type mm-hmm. things.
I know that guy.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
there's actually two versions of that guy. One's awesome. One is the worst human being on the planet.
Oh, do they ever go to the same party? Because that'd be weird.
If they're a listener of this show, I bet they're the latter.
Yeah.
No, the first. The first.
Latter is the second.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I know. Don't tell me what the ladder is, Brian.
You confuse them just now.
You fucker. I'm saying that they're not the bad person. They're the good one.
Other things that were purchased on Amazon on the click-through banner on AndersonandBrian.com include a crib, a 4-in-1 convertible crib.
Oh, look
crib.
At that procreation. That?
Somebody got, summer school. Chestnuts, obstetric anesthesia, principles and practice, extrovert consult, 5th edition.
These are books, right? Not like kits.
No, they're learning to be an anesthesiologist.
But it's a book. It's not like a kit that you practice on your child.
Oh, no, it's a book. It's definitely a book. Crisis management and anesthesiology, 2nd edition.
I'm thinking about the idea of buying a crib and how much happiness I think that would bring me.
Just buying a crib?
Well, for a purpose.
Oh, is it having it around the house?
Yeah.
An Asus Zenfone was purchased. iPad was purchased. A Weber. Oh, Smoky Mountain cooker. 14-inch charcoal smoker. Nice.
Gotta smoke it.
A 12x30 pool. An above-ground pool was purchased. Enjoy that in your backyard. Or front yard, I suppose. What is this here?
Roof.
Oh, you know when you go to the pharmacy or the grocery store and you go to use the restroom? Like, yeah, the code is 12345. Yeah. The code is blah, blah, blah. Someone bought one of those push-button door handles.
They don't trust the roomies.
You can get anything on Amazon.
Yeah.
One of those push-button door handles only came from, like, factories. Oh, an apron from Breaking Bad. It says, let's cook.
Oh, I like it. That let's
Breaking
cook, bitch.
Bad apron. That's right.
I bet it says bitch.
They also brought a mug that said, like, coffee time, bitch, or something like that.
Science, bitch.
That's right. A magic bullet blender. A Yamaha digital piano was purchased. Skateboarding knee pads were purchased. Do you use knee pads when you skateboard?
No, I don't.
Come on. Is that square?
I'm cool guy.
Okay.
Is that square?
Is that square? A plyo box, a plyometric jumping box adjustable was purchased. A tankless water heater. One of those spray painter things you can spray your house with. You know, the big guns you spray your
house with. Yeah, or you could put your name Chaka. Chaka, if that's your tag, on the side of buildings.
I suppose you could.
Chaka. That was the big tag guy in the early 80s in L.A.
Was it?
You'd see Chaka everywhere. Chaka. And he got arrested finally, and what I heard was he's not even allowed to have, like, a pen.
He's banned from having, like, I've heard that urban legend, like, banned from having any paint.
Chaka. Chaka was there. I forgot all about Chaka. Chaka.
Someone got 18 battery-operated Christmas string lights, a set of string lights, 18
Ooh.
Sets.
You know what for?
Gotta get them now.
Either you found a deal and you're preparing, or raves. Ooh. Getting ready to go do a little molly. Skip around.
Gotta put the glow stick in the mouth.
Around, yeah.
Yeah. Video games were purchased, a Nintendo Wii U, 32 gigs, an Xbox One Assassin's Creed bundle, 500 gigs, and a PlayStation 4 bundle, or console, with, what is this here, Free the Last of Us voucher. And by the way, thanks to everyone who bought a Batman Arkham Knight, that apparently dropped this week. Batman Arkham Knight, you're knocking down my equipment.
It's not your equipment. Look at this guy's brain, how it works.
My equipment? Batman Arkham
paid
Knight.
Paid for exactly 50%.
Batman
Actually,
Arkham Knight.
Paid for more than I should have. Here we go. Here are the movies that are clicking. Got a little Chappie. Chappie is a movie I must own.
Chappie is out.
Now, here, listen to me. I've thought of this way more than I should have while sitting in traffic, while daydreaming, when I should be doing productive thought. I'm thinking, am I really going to have the balls to put Chappie on my Vaulties top 10 at the end of the year?
We'll see. It's a long year.
I know, but...
Right now, I
don't see a world where Chappie, hand or not, does not belong on my list, because that movie changed my fucking life. It really did.
The end for it.
Cannot do a heist. Heist is a crime.
Go to sleep.
I love it.
Go to sleep.
Oh, there's an alternate ending, too, which worries me.
I got it in a red envelope just today.
Oh, did you? You have not seen Chaps?
I watch it tonight.
Ooh. All right. Just know that we have severely oversold this movie, but he is.
We have not severely oversold it.
Sleepy Weeby.
Asleep.
Yo, you enjoyed Chappie. You enjoyed it quite a bit.
I was aware of Diane Wood before that.
Wow.
First of all, oh my God. Do you have any things he's saying that are wrong? It's Deanfit, okay? And it's not a he, it's a them. There's three of them? Okay. Anyways, I got a fan of my, I had heard of them and I've been deflecting for years. Like, I know, I guess, yeah, you told me about your Diane Wood and he looks all weird. That was me too. Now I'm well aware. Well, who too well aware?
Exposed.
All right.
We got through one movie so far.
I got an email from a buddy of mine who worked on a few of my films. You know who you are, Julian. And he's like, here's another band that's a lot like the N-word, but less annoying. Fuck you. How about that? Less annoying. Here we go. Jurassic Park 3 was clicked through. Smart. You got to get them all in before you go see Lost World to Jurassic Park.
I'll just turn the volume down.
What's Lost World to Jurassic Park? That's
the second one.
Oh, that's the second one. Monsters University. Somebody took a dive headfirst in for that one. I think I might leave that off my list forever. I gotta see that Cars 2 and Monsters U just so I can say I've seen every fucking Pixar movie. Pitch Perfect. You guys didn't believe us, huh? You going in? All right. The Voices.
That's a beloved movie.
The Voices Sing a Happy Song was clicked through. Zero Dark Thirty, which,
no
you know, if you believe what you read nowadays, Zero Dark Thirty was all a bunch of BS. You know, none of that happened. Or it didn't happen that way
at all. Doesn't make it not a great movie.
Yeah, it's true. Boogie Nights was clicked through. Dread. You know, I had lunch just today at that intersection where the open of Boogie Nights opens up on that marquee,
right.
And then it has that incredible long shot down the street. I had lunch on that corner just today. Hot Tub Time Machine 2, still got to see that. Kingsman, The Secret Service. Brian wrongly believes it's better than Mad Max.
Definitely fool.
Smoking Aces, click through. Superbad, which was... The Deer Hunter was clicked through. I'm not going to say The Hammer. The Mist was clicked through. Hell to the Yes, as well as The Simpson Movie and Unforgiven, which left me kind of a little confused. Like, that's the movie that everyone says is the greatest thing ever?
Mm.
That?
It's a very good movie.
That?
It's a really good movie.
It was okay.
You know what else is okay?
Going back to the show.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Gigi Allen, and you're listening to The Film Vault on AndersonandBrian.com. Yeah, welcome back. Check, 1, 2. Are we good? No, just want to make sure we're recording. Okay, good. Yeah, welcome back.
Trust,
top five.
Trust the producer, Brian. He knows what he's doing. Yeah. All right?
Top five songs.
Musical numbers.
from movies.
Performances.
That existed in that movie's world, performed by a character, possibly a hit.
Uh-huh.
Well, maybe not a hit.
Uh-huh.
All minor hits. I don't know about you.
I don't know how do they describe it in the movie? Like saying, look, it's a hit, boss. This is a gold record. Hear this gold spinning?
Sometimes. Some refer to it as the hit song, or it becomes a hit song, or become known for the song.
Okay, mine, not so much.
I don't have chart positions.
Mine, not so much. Actually, some are not hits. They're actually, I don't see one hit. Oh, one hit. Found a hit. And then one's a hit in real life. It became a hit on the actual charts. But in the, oh yeah, no, two hits. Sorry. Two hits, two bona fide hits.
I have one bona fide hit on the charts, a couple that are well known, and some that are semi obscure.
Let's do it. Let's get to. Oh, also, I should say.
Any funny ones for you?
All funny.
All funny.
Pretty much everything super recent too.
Most of mine are too.
I don't know if anything took place before the millennium.
Really?
Yeah.
I have one from 1984 and one from 1980.
Okay,
one from
good.
1993.
Good. I didn't really stretch those muscles, Brian. I'm like the songs that I really love from movies. Recent.
Now, how often do I assign you a music movie?
Way, way too often.
So I suck my teeth into this list.
This is a Brian list through and through. The only
very
way that he could be, it could be more of a Brian movie if it was only documentaries and robots were the musicians.
No documentaries. No real life. More on that later.
Well, enough preamble. Let's just do the show.
And additionally, for me, I don't know about you.
Oh, Christ, clips. It continues.
You have clips? Songs? These are the versions of the songs that appeared in the movie. Because some songs became hits, other versions.
What?
You'll see.
What?
It'll make sense.
We're doing something very different today. The listener doesn't need to worry their little head about it, but new equipment. We actually can't even hear ourselves right now for the sake of the song.
It's kind of nice.
And Brian asked me if I have clips. Isn't that why we're going bending over backwards right now? Of course I have clips.
When I said clips, I have clips as opposed to songs.
Oh, no, I have songs.
Do you have clips?
What the fuck? No, you have clips and songs.
Mine are from the movies.
Are they talking about the song and then we hear the song?
Right, sometimes.
Jesus, how did you?
You'll
did you,
see.
Did you add up your clips? How long?
22 and a half minutes.
I wouldn't be shocked.
Actually,
your original idea
actually might be a little light.
What? Are you serious?
We won't listen to the wall, or will we? Some of them might like so much you won't listen to all of them.
Right.
Okay, go. But tie at number five.
Go. What?
You have tie number five.
Tie at number five.
Tie number five. Two funny songs. First of all, I know for a fact that one of these movies has never come up on Film Bowl.
Does this mean we have to hear both the songs?
Oh, fuck yeah. But they're both about a minute long, so it's okay.
Okay, good.
Yeah. First.
Minute long hits?
It's a snippet of a song.
Okay.
You only hear about a minute of a song in the movie.
Oh, I see.
But the entire thing exists on the soundtrack.
Gotcha.
That's what I'm saying. This is not the soundtrack version. This is the movie version.
Gotcha.
So we're going to hear a minute of a song from... Top Secret. Top Secret is not going to talk about very much on this show.
No.
Have you seen Top Secret?
The cow with the boots and Val Kilmer doing funny things. And the phone is really big in the lens, but it really is big when he gets up to it. It's actually a really giant phone.
You're aware of Top Secret.
My brother is a massive fan of Top Secret. I watched it as a child, and I said, Brett, you're wrong. Not a good movie.
It's an okay movie. It's not hold up to Airplane.
It's a wannabe Airplane movie.
Yeah, you're right.
But it's made by the same
Zucker Abraham Zucker.
Yeah, so...
Val Kilmer does sing. He plays a musician in Nick Rivers.
Sorry, remember earlier when I was talking about what idiot kids are? Kids are idiots?
Yes.
Like that, I was an idiot when I was a kid. I'm like, that movie's just a cheap ripoff of Airplane. It's the same fucking people making, so it's not a cheap ripoff. It's just them doing the shtick.
It's just them doing another thing that they do. Nick
kids
Rivers
are,
is a Elvis Presley-like pop star. He's very popular, and he goes to Nazi Germany in World War II to do a tour, which is kind of anachronistic, because it's 1942, and he's not, or whatever, it's 1944, and he's not going to be an Elvis-style pop star that long ago. That's like the days like Frank Sinatra.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, he sings a song.
They fold the time and space for the sake of the joke.
Yeah, for the sake of the joke. There's a lot of anachronistic stuff in here. There's anachronistic.
I don't like that word.
Oh, sorry.
You can stop using that.
Incongruous.
That's better.
Okay. He sings a song. His first, most people know him from, he opens the movie by playing a song called Skeet Surfing. And Skeet Surfing is sort of a Beach Boys ripoff where the guys are actually shooting skeet while surfing.
Right.
It's pretty funny. A better song. I think it's supposed to be funny, but it's actually just a great song.
Long
How Silly Can You Get by Nick Rivers is number five for me.
So Brian. Is Is seriously?
How great is the song?
Not. Brian, I give it to you when something's great.
This is Val Kilmer singing.
Doesn't make it any better. In fact, it makes it a little worse.
You want to stop popping fingers?
No, I don't want to pop anything. I want to pop this off.
Pop me in the face?
Kind of.
It's a great song.
How silly can you get, Brian? This is like a Christian folk song. I can see like a Christian family in their fucking Winnebago traveling cross country.
How silly can you get?
Oh, I can see them. So you're perfect. I hate that family. And they're enjoying the song, singing it in unison. Fuck you in the song.
I think this song's supposed to be funny, but it's just a great song. It's a little pop song.
There's nothing great. Why is it so great?
Can you get?
Brian, you can't force it on me, okay? It's not coming. It's not going to pass the threshold of likelihood.
You're going to be humming that.
Okay, it's not. No, I will not.
That's a great song. I think it's supposed to be funny. That's not funny. That's just great.
I wish you didn't have a tie, because it would be great to just go straight to my number five, because there couldn't be a more harsh contrast.
Well, maybe this will
the contrast is so...
Maybe this will lead into yours, because the reason being... It's a movie that's never come up on the show. It's called CB4. You ever seen CB4?
I just mentioned CB4 moments ago. Off mic, though.
Oh, you did? Yes.
Yeah. What? I recognized it when Logan played something.
Oh, yeah, okay, sorry. Yeah. It's never come up on the show in natural discussion.
You know what? I don't like what's happening right here. And what? I think the listener probably picked up on it, too. I feel like you've already taken a peek, and you know that you've won this week, and you keep asking me, like, leading questions. Like,
oh, I didn't.
Top Secret? Have you seen it, huh? CB4, what about that? You seen it?
I'm always fishing.
Okay. Yeah, I saw CB4 numerous times as a child.
So you're familiar with Straight Outta Lowcash?
Perhaps.
Let's hear it.
No idea.
This is a...
Did they have to pay licensing fees?
I'm thinking they must have credited the song.
Because this sounds exactly like it.
Oh, this is a straight parody of Straight Outta Compton.
But they even...
Straight parody.
They're even using the same beats.
Yeah, that's what I mean. This is like a cover.
Guar did a cover of this, which was pretty great. Guar's cover was pretty great.
Lowcash. They're from Lowcash.
Straight out of Microwave. Okay. Lowcash? Why is that funny?
Because they're not gangster rappers. They've adopted these identities. They've stolen these identities. They're like pretending.
Yeah, sounds hilarious. Chris Rock, right?
Chris Rock.
Yeah.
And he's backed by, he's MC Gusto. He's backed by Stabmaster Arson and Dead Mike.
Mike. It. Is Mike still alive?
Dead Mike.
Is Mike alive?
It says like, Dead Mike, hello.
Oh, I get testing, it. Yeah, testing, testing one, Mike. Two. Uh-huh. Hey, that movie gets remade today.
Stabmaster Arson.
That movie gets remade today. Who gets cast in the lead?
Chris Rock.
Kevin Hart.
Chris Rock.
Kevin Hart.
You think so?
Wrong answer, Kevin Hart. Number five for me. This is a movie
so great.
That has been brought up on the Hair Film Vault before, Brett.
Yes, let's hear it.
And unfortunately, it holds up and it's good enough that I have it on my list.
Is it a stark contrast?
Stark. Stark. Not as stark, though, with the CB4 right there. I actually... brought lyrics, which I will speak along, because it's very hard to understand what these lyrics are saying.
Well, MC Gusto is saying Straight Outta Lowcash, crazy motherfucker named Gusto.
We heard, Brian. We heard.
You'd fuck your mom, but the
my turn,
a
Brian.
Hoe.
That's how it works. That's how it works. Back and forth. Do a little give and take. You like to take. Number five for me.
Fuck your cats.
Aqua Teen Hunger Force: movie film for theaters.
No.
Yeah. Oh yeah. 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 Brian. Now this is a. Are you familiar with this, Logan? You know what I'm
very much
about?
So.
Okay. Yes. Good. 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 One of the all-time great movie songs ever made, Brian.
Really?
Now, it opens up with the cliched little, remember the old hot dog and soda drink will come out and say, tell you
go to the lobby.
Yes. Yep. Okay, so it's those guys. And this is the very open of the film, Aqua Teen Hunger Force, movie film for theaters, 2007, okay? And they're saying, I have the opening lines where the hot dog's like, you can't beat my meat. And then the drink says, and sucking on me is really neat. Something like that. It's, you know, referential. Yeah. It's suggestive. Yep. And then they run into like the bad. Now, this came up on top five, I think opening cold opens maybe came up on a list before. And then as they're walking across on the screen, this is actually being projected as though we're at a drive-in, right? We're watching this like right before the movie begins. This has nothing to do with the rest of the movie. It's its own little thing because they know that we're there to see Aqua Teen Hunger Force. Now, they stumble across, Brian, a pretzel. some nachos on drums, right? And a gumdrop with like an eye piercing. Bad looking dudes. Scary looking dudes, right? And they're all a little bit nervous. And then what we get to hear is the greatest song that I can think of ever written about movies. And it's by the real band is Mastodon. And the name of the song is Cut You with a Linoleum Knife. Cut You with a Linoleum Knife. And it's a song directed right at the audience. And it goes a little something like this.
You can't beat my meat for a special treat. Sucking on me is really neat. Don't be a jerk.
Oh, I got it right.
Yeah.
And then I cut it here just to make a decent edit. So the first lines are, don't talk, watch. Don't talk, watch. You came here, watch it. Don't like it? Walk out. We still have your fucking money. Do not nudge, kick, or jiggle the seat in front of you. I'm sitting there. I am everywhere at once, and I will cut you up. If you make out here, I will cut your lips and tongue from your head with a linoleum knife, Brian.
It's rare to threaten the audience out of the gate.
Do not explain the plot. If you don't understand, then you should not be here. Your money is our money, and we will spend it on drugs. They're all singing. Like the angry junk food is singing to us. Do not crinkle your food wrappers loudly, Brian. Be considerate to others, or I will bite your torso and give you a disease. I think that the original title was probably Give You AIDS, but they thought that was too long, that the lyric was wrong. Did you bring your baby? Babies don't watch this. Take the seat outside, leave it in the streets, run over it after the show. It's a little dark. If I see you videotaping this movie, Satan will rain down your throat with hot acid and dissolve your testicles and turn your guts into snakes, friend. This is a copyrighted movie for Time Warner. If I find you... Oh, I'm a little ahead. God damn it. I guess you can almost hear it. I'm ruining it, but people should really enjoy this on their own. Tear your wife in half. I'm pretty sure the original lyric there was something about rape, and they probably, And now there's just a guitar solo with the pretzel.
That was pretty
ripping, shredding on guitar.
Now, here's my question.
Now, this is the one controversial one that I have, because this song is never referenced.
Does this fit the criteria?
It's a great song. It needs to be listened to by everyone.
Okay, so it's more about the greatness of the song than it is about the...
I should put this on my phone, bring speakers with me everywhere, every time I go in a theater, and just start... If someone starts talking, I guess it'd be kind of defeating the purpose, but start playing this song.
Ironically playing it for them in the middle of the movie.
Guys, I know that I just ruined that by talking over it. I just wanted to make sure that everyone could clearly hear the lyrics.
That helped.
Because there was actually subtitles. It's a little bit hard to hear that death metal whine, grind.
Yep.
What do they call it? Gravelly. What are they?
Crunch.
Chorting. I don't know. Gravel. Anyways.
All right. Didn't quite fit the criteria, but it's a song that's performed
by a band on a screen. It's original.
What we're talking about.
Yeah, it is. That's part of the criteria.
Are the rest of your movies more in line with what we're talking about?
Brian, from what I understand, they have to be like bona fide hits within the movie.
No. They have to be part of the movie's world.
It's part of the world. It's Aqua Teen Hunger Forces, which is a very vast universe.
I set up my
very
five.
Vast universe, okay. That Aqua Teen Hunger Force. Anything goes. Ask Carl. He'll tell you.
Number four for me.
Ask him about Ham Banana. He'll tell you even more.
Why not? Mm-hmm. Number four for me. I brought up, I think it was top five movie bands. We talked about, who was it? Aldous Snow and African Child. Who sings that?
No one knows but you, Brian.
Infant Sorrow from Get Him to the Greek.
Oh, yeah. Great.
Great. But better than that, Jackie Q. Jackie Q, Rose Byrne. Mm-hmm. She's a pop star. She's an oversexed pop star.
You've already done this.
I did. I did her other song, "Ring Around My Rosie," which is about her butthole. This is "Super Tight," which is about her vagina.
Christ. It sounds exact same. I just heard it when I was.
Don't play that. Play this.
And she points her. Twat.
That's right.
Why did I just say twat? Why do I get crude with you?
Say that.
I would never say that anywhere else. Ew.
I can get out of the song. Ride me inside me, it's super tight. Boom, boom, shake the room like a dynamite. Ride me inside me, it's super tight. Boom, boom,
shake the room like a dynamite. Don't need no fuss or string. This is the kind of music you listen to?
No, but I do enjoy this.
Mm-hmm.
Let's listen to the lyrics.
You got to me, woman.
your type. I'm gonna fuck you so deep. I'll give you a lobotomy. I'm a zombie. You dug me from my grave. You took me ass from Africa and made me a slave. You're too tight. Like a wet vice. Your pussy is a crucifix. My cock is like Christ. Jackie Q.
Oh, wow.
She's gifted That's with my implement. She super my golden balls the way she's strumming this instrument. Check it.
All right, you can take it down. Oh, please track that down. Listen to all the thing, people.
That Anderson. Fictional Christian family traveling across country in the Winnebago would not have liked that.
I have a little something out called Tool Tunes. These are songs that you like, you enjoy, but they make you a tool for listening. If it's a song that you would roll your window up while listening to because you don't want people to hear
that's pretty
you
pretty much
you
everything
of
my age. I don't want anyone to hear me listen to anything except for talk.
It's not a guilty pleasure because you're like, this is actually a good song. I just don't want to hear people, want people to hear me singing along to it.
Right.
That's super tight. Super tight.
You would roll up your window. You heard? Did you hear me talking on the other
your
show?
Pussy's like across my dick is like Christ.
How about listening to that one Dan Ward song?
No, what happened?
I'll fuck you in the asshole.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Till you fall in love, faggot. That horribly, but they're just taking lyrics from what Mike Tyson said
right,
at
right,
an actual.
That's right, and sang to
and
them,
my
yeah.
stereo's broken, so I pulled up a red light, and that song was on. I'm like, this shouldn't be on because it's hot and windows are down. So I started turning it down, but it actually made it go up louder and louder. Oh, so
projecting.
Uncomfortable. And I couldn't roll up my windows fast enough because I'm so dumb in a panic moment. I'm like, dude, all you have to do is push the button off.
I should give writing credit where it's due. This is written by Jason Siegel and Lyle Workman. This is a song by Jackie Q, a.k.a. Rose Byrne. Give credit where it's due.
All right. Now, the closest thing I have to something like that were not really my style of music, if I have one. But this is a song that is exceptionally catchy. Came in a little movie 2004. Mm. I wouldn't be shocked if it's on your list.
Oh!
Bonafide hit.
Okay.
Scotty doesn't know. Euro Trip.
I've never seen Euro Trip.
If so you play your cards right, I might throw it your way, because it's a fantastic little movie.
I've heard good things.
This is performed, actually sung by Matt Damon, Brian, who's in a punk band, and he's singing a song about how Scotty doesn't know with Scotty's ex-girlfriend. And here it goes. This is in the beginning of the movie, right before the boyfriend, it's played by Scott Mechelwitz, goes to on his European vacation right. with his friends. And here's the song.
Scotty doesn't know that Fiona and me do it in my van every Sunday. She tells him she's in church,
very specific.
But she doesn't go. Still she's on her knees. And Scotty doesn't know. Oh, Scotty doesn't know. So don't tell Scotty. Scotty doesn't know. Scotty doesn't know.
So by the end of the film, they go to Europe.
Part of the criteria.
And Scotty is the boyfriend. He is Scott Mechelwitz, and his heart is broken as he's watching this happen. And she's up on stage at one point with Matt Damon, and they're like tongue kissing in between lyrics. We go to Europe, and this song becomes like a bona fide hit. There was dance remix versions. His friends that he's over in Europe with are like humming it and singing. His own mom likes it. She's like, it's catchy, son. So this is exactly the criteria you're looking for in our 50-minute fucking discussion on what this episode is all about.
This is exactly it.
And Scotty doesn't know. I should say it was written and performed originally by a band called Lustra, and it actually charted at one point in real life as well. But I don't know if there is a band name for the Scotty Doesn't Know Matt Damon band.
His character is
he's much more punk than the song would suggest. Shaved head, lots of aggression and hostility. He actually looked kind of cool. Like, when I first saw it, I didn't know.
Four?
It was him. And I'm like, I didn't even recognize him right off the bat. I'm like, oh my God, that's fucking Matt Damon. This is back 2004, too. So, 11 years ago before Matt Damon was born and everywhere else. All right. Enough of the old Scotty.
That's all right. That's pretty good.
What do you mean that's all right?
That fits. That's good.
Oh, my next one's fun.
Really?
I'm excited.
Mine get less fun. Well, no, that's not true, actually. Mine get more serious.
Get more fun as we go.
Not less funny and more serious. But fun. Number three. Yes. Came up, I think, for the first time last week or the week before. In the last couple of weeks, for the first time, Crazy Heart made my list. And God damn it, when this list came up, I said, I got to hear The Weary Kind. The Weary Kind by, this was performed by Tommy Sweet, a.k.a. Colin Farrell, written by Bad Blake, a.k.a. Jeff Bridges, played by Jeff Bridges. Mm. And this won the Oscar.
This is where the old-timey, washed-up country singer writes a song for the young, hip, new...
Tommy Sweet.
The performer that crosses bridges.
Recording artist
that crosses the bridge gap.
He transcends
crosses
genre.
Over.
Crossover hit. Let's hear it. At this point, the movie's already hit. It's already become. It's already earning him money. Get the check. And
playing
the
at a bar with 200 people.
No, this is Tommy Sweet in a concert.
Sounds like a very small audience.
You roll himself off with nothing to lose.
Tiny audience.
This ain't no place for the weary kind. You called all your shots.
This is your number three?
Yeah.
You like this song that much?
I love it.
Why?
It's a great song. The version that everyone knows is by Brian Bingham. He's the co-writer of the song with T-Bone Burnett. And that's from the soundtrack. I could have played that more famous version, but this is the one from the movie.
Is that really Colin singing?
Yeah. Colin Farrell is Tommy Sweet.
True Detective. I'm excited.
Yeah. I love that. I love that song. I love that version. I mean, the one that hit the charts and won the Oscar is the soundtrack version.
Soundtrack version, yes.
But there's something great about Colin Farrell, who's not that great of a singer, but he's putting some emotion into it.
Can I say something?
Please.
Uninspired. Not impressed.
By my choice?
Do not like.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, considering it's...
Seems very run-of-the-mill. This is exactly what I'm talking about, like, with your love for old Blue Eyes, Frank Sinatra. Like, just jammed down your throat. Like, yeah, well, it was an acclaimed, esteemed song. The Academy seemed to all straighten their bow ties while voting for it. And this is... it's like white old man jowly music.
That?
Yes.
Bad Blake's lived a hard life, man. He's an alcoholic. He crashed his car. He chased away the woman who loved him.
In the story, but the actual song that won the awards that you love.
I think that's a really sweet song, and you think it's a jammed
out. Third favorite.
Yeah.
I guess because your criteria, you really had to narrow it more than I did.
A little bit. I also left off some ones that may have made a list, but they've made a list before. We talked about them too much. They're in Just Friends.
I'm going to be shocked if my number three is not on your list.
Okay,
I'm not going to say anything. I'm just going to have Logan push play. I'm going to be shocked it's not on your list. Shocked. Go ahead. Bit of curveball I got here for you.
Please, Mr. Kennedy. I don't want to go.
Intentionally left off.
Why would you leave this off? How could you leave this off?
Why do you have this version?
Because it's bizarre that these versions actually existed. I thought it was completely and totally 100% original for the movie, and I learned that, no, there's multiple versions of this.
Like old versions?
From the 60s, yeah. But this is very different. The lyrics, they took the Please Mr. Kennedy hook, and then instead of, it's an anti-Vietnam song about they don't want to go to Vietnam. But they made it about outer space and much more fun and playful.
Should we hear the one from the
I didn't have it. I just wanted to throw this one. This one, I should say, who...
Because this is not indicative of...
Wood. God damn it. What's his name? No.
What? Lou Davis?
Mickey Wood, I believe his name. And
the
Gold...
You should find the one from
and the Gold Coast singers sing another very similar version about... Please, Mr. Kennedy, don't make me do this or that.
Right.
What I'm talking about, of course, is Please, Mr. Kennedy, sung by Justin Timberlake in Inside
scene.
Llewyn Davis.
God, what a great scene in an otherwise ordinary movie.
Otherwise bummer of a movie. Yeah. I mean, it's got its art.
Ordinary.
If it wasn't the Coen brothers, I think I would like it more. Is that strange? Because it didn't feel particularly extra over-the-top Coen brothers-esque. I'd be like, oh, there's something there. But it's the Coen brothers, just like Pixar. Like, I hold it to higher, which is not fair. And I realize that I do that. But it's like going to your favorite restaurant. And if you don't get something just absolutely, you know, spot on, as Ramsey would say. But I was fascinated to find out that this was not made just for this. I mean, they had a shred that
they plucked from real life.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
And this was actually the movie version, Please Mr. Kennedy, which is one of the all-time great songs. I will be listening to that song 20 years from now. I mean, I have that song in my phone. I go to
it. Isn't it great?
It's so great.
Oh no.
And that song was a collaboration of Timberlake, the Grammy and Oscar winning songwriter, as well as T-Bone Burnett, the Coen brothers.
There's a lot of dialogue after this.
Adam Driver, who has he's also contributed to it. They all contributed to it, as well as Isaac. Isaac definitely had something. So they all kind of just riffed.
And
from what I read, from what I figured out, from what I researched, Brian, they just kind of spent some time together riffing and figuring out what they're going to do, and they came up with this, which seems like...
kind of comes through. It's the one inspired scene in the movie.
It's the one upbeat.
It's inspired.
Yeah.
Like, you feel like they're actually enjoying it.
So catchy.
This is from the movie.
Oh.
And it's almost a standalone scene. You can probably watch it on YouTube and get as much enjoyment out of it.
Yeah.
Although it does come, end up becoming like sort of a hit later, like later in the movie, and like
it becomes a bona fide hit, which is a part of the movie's plot as well.
He regrets his decision to take like the $200.
To let you know what Llewyn Davis does. But I mean, I understand what people see when they see this movie. I just don't like what I see. There's a lot of critics who love this movie, I think, because they see themselves in it, like a kind of a failed artist who has principles and they don't want to play by the rules and they do their own thing. I just saw it as, and it's rare that you see a movie where the lead guy doesn't actually prevail and become a hit, you know what I mean?
No, totally.
Or, and also he didn't go down like the road of like drugs or alcohol. It was unique, but it's just, it wasn't enjoyable. It wasn't an enjoyable experience. I did appreciate the full 7 days and the full circle, and like I can't tell what's the beginning and the end. I love that. That's all really great, but it's like a painting I don't want on my wall. Glad I saw it once in the museum. I don't need to have it on my wall. Maybe in a book on the coffee table, but I don't want it on my wall.
I agree.
You know what I mean? You know what I mean? All right. 9, 8.
That's great.
That was the first time I had ever seen Adam Driver, too. I had never seen him in anything that I remembered. You know, he's one of those background characters that I didn't really notice before. First time I noticed him, now I see him everywhere, and he's becoming one of my favorites, and he reminds me a lot of Logan.
Every time you see him, you're like, uh-oh.
Yeah, he's always going to be that guy at first. No. You know what I mean?
God damn, it's a great scene.
Such a great song.
Coming up next. Thanks for pulling it up, Logan. Coming up next, the conclusion. The best songs for movies that are real in hits.
Top twos. You got us.
And our friends are back in town. There's no time to worry. Pick yourself up off the ground. Because life is precious and we will use every minute. Enjoy the good, the bad, and smile.
Right.
Anderson.
As you know, a couple months ago, Casper Beds.
Yes.
They sent me a bed.
They did.
For the wife and I.
And it's been a few months.
I was concerned because they came on as a sponsor. I'm like, well, not until I sleep on your bed. I don't want to talk about your bed if I don't know what it is. And then they sent it, and I was concerned. Like, what if I don't like it?
Yeah, we're uncomfortable promoting products.
Uncomfortable.
I personally either use or at least enjoy.
I'm not a good negotiator, and I would have felt like really awkward and weird. Like, I don't like the bed, please.
You accepted this thing.
I have the Fitbit, and it tracks my sleep pattern. And I swear to God, and I had a Tempur-Pedic before this.
It just gives you a big thumbs up.
It does not give you the thumbs up, Brian, but it tells me how many times I moved during the night, how many times
restless.
I was restless. Yeah, and the minutes, marked improvement since I got this Casper bed. Boy, was I relieved when I installed it. You take it out of the box, and it just inflates right there before your very eyes. And it's made with latex as well as the memory foam. They come together for a better night's sleep. The wife is very hard on beds too, and she was very concerned.
Sure,
because we like firm and soft, and
yeah,
but it works
differently.
It works for both of us, and it still has that firmness. We could put the wine on the end of the bed, Brian, and do whatever we want in the bed. It's not going to spill. It's at one of those beds,
right?
But it's at a fraction of the price of what you would normally get.
Well,
that was
nice.
Another concern of mine. But if you're in the market for a new bed and you're pricing them out, trust me, don't discount Casper because of their low prices. This is a quality bed. I love this thing.
Get $50 toward any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/filmvault and using the code filmvault. Terms and conditions apply.
We dance and play till morning breaks. When the sun sets, it's time to wake.
New sponsor, Anderson. New sponsor this week.
Yeah, they're the next sponsor.
They're the next sponsor.
Next.
Next Issue. Now, Next Issue is an app, everybody. Check it out. I actually have been using this, and I genuinely like it. So whatever we endorse on this show, I promise we at least use, if not like, and I really like this.
At least one of us does.
Christy really likes this, too, because here's what Next Issue is.
Who's Christy?
It's sort of Netflix for magazines.
Your wife?
Yeah, my wife.
Yes.
It's Netflix for magazines. It is a subscription service, I think, starts at $10 a month, and you can read tons of magazines. And these aren't like, I know, right away, I know what you're thinking, because what I was thinking is like, oh, these are weird, like, fishing magazines or a little,
Jet.
like they're weird magazines that no one reads or a little unheard of. Oh, no. This is, aside from pornography, this is every magazine I've heard of.
There's
no
porn.
Everything from People to Time to Sports Illustrated to Us Weekly to everything in between. Esquire, GQ, all the magazines are here. Weekly magazines are like an upgraded, like a premium thing, but monthly magazines, all you can read for $10 a month.
Wow.
If you want Us Weekly and People and all that stuff, Time or whatever's weekly, you upgrade to the next level like you would do for streaming on Netflix, and Christy was reading it by the pool Memorial Day, just flipping through.
The pool? Oh, by the pool, by the on pool. Memorial Day.
And yeah, like they're optimized. You can like scroll through and enlarge things and save things for later. It's a pretty sweet app. So
trees have never been happier.
Indeed. Try your 30-day free trial. Check it out. See if you like it as much as me over at nextissue.com/vault and read up, way up on all your interests. Nextissue.com/vault.
Thanks for making The Big Podcast with Shaq the number one sports podcast on Podcast One and iTunes.
He is comedian Frank Caliendo.
Frank, can we play a game right now? Whenever I say the name, you got to give me that voice. Barkley.
Oh, that's what I'm talking about. Is there a subject we're talking about? Like
Stephen A. Food?
I've been credulous to this entire situation. I understand where we're going.
John Madden.
And then you think of all the things that these guys
Barkley.
Do. The funny thing is that Shaq is a master puppeteer. That's what makes him really, really good.
He's like a regular Jim Henson. Let me just say that. Look out.
The Big Podcast with Shaq.
Back.
That's me. It's up right now at podcast1.com.
That's podcastone.com.
Exciting.
To those people. I'm excited.
I'm ready
excited
to let you down.
Number one and number two. I love controversy.
Oh,
high controversy.
Good. I'm glad. I'm glad you're going to bring up the rear with this one. Good, because I'm letting you down, and I don't really have a whole lot.
Well, then I should go last.
The ones that I love, bang, I mean, they're all hit. They're all there. But it's just there's not a whole lot of surprises here, Brian.
Well, you go number two first, then.
Play it, Logan. I get chills still.
Sorry, do we got
to this date? I still get chills when I hear this song, and it's only been a year and a half, but still.
It's only been a year and a half.
Maybe a year. Maybe a year and a couple months. And play it. Bring it. Oh, when the bass slides in there. Chills. I'm getting chills right now.
Oh, yeah.
Talking about a little song by the Sorenfrubs. The Sorenfrubs from Frank.
It's
nice to see.
It's delicious.
I love you all.
Be here.
It's so good.
Fiddly digits.
I love you all. The song is called I Love You All. I'm pretty sure it's a typo. He's singing to the fucking wall. But it's one of the great songs, obviously. My number two favorite song ever that was I've seen performed in a movie, Brian. With instruments and whatnot.
It's delicious.
And I like this movie a lot. And then when this last... I'd just say the end scene, the song is involved. It fucking
this
just
is the climactic
cranked
scene.
It. Cranked it up in my head to one of my all-time favorites. Like,
wow.
Yeah, this is, you know, top 10 last year.
I did not share your enthusiasm for this movie, but I did like it on a weird level.
Stick with you.
It does. I still think about Barkley movie.
I still get emails from listeners saying thank you very much for Frank. And a lot of time when I get emails, I say thank you for letting me know about this movie and that movie. Frank is inevitably one of them, invariably.
Interesting.
So, yeah, this is, I should say also that this is Michael Fassbender singing.
That's right. He is Frank.
That'd be a whole other, like, category. A whole other list we could have done. It's just, like, actors actually singing.
Yeah.
You know, that's right. A whole different... Too many nooks and crannies and possibilities with this.
I'd like to blow it out. I'd do it again.
No. I know you could. You're a music guy. You love it. All right, so anyways, yeah, if you have not seen Frank, chances are if you listen to this podcast, you're going to like it. If you listen to this program, you're
Can
probably going to like it.
This song is Beatles-esque in their sort of psychedelic period. This could very easily fit on like Magical Mystery Tour.
Yeah, I can see that. I know what you're saying. I'm picking up what you're putting down. All right, speaking of putting down, let's put Frank down.
That's beautiful. All right, number two for me. Oh, I feel very strongly about this. This was my number one until I came up with my controversial choice.
Where'd you come up with your... Oh, you're in the shower?
With what, this choice or my number one?
Your number one.
Boy, where did I come... It was... You know
how
sometimes...
A chemo session?
Sometimes, like, the Archangel Michael will shine his light upon you and you're struck with a notion or inspiration or heavenly inspiration.
The Archangel Michael?
We'll get to that in a second.
Isn't that Travolta?
Number two.
Isn't that John Travolta?
Number two.
That's whatever I think of the Archangel Michael. I just think of John Travolta because of that
ahead
fucking
and play
movie.
It, Logan. Scene from the movie.
I know this, but I don't know it yet. I don't know it yet.
It's a marching band.
Oh, yeah.
Fuck
well,
yeah.
You ruined this for me, Brian.
Why?
Because in our 15-minute conversation, you used us as an example, so I knew it was going to be on your list, so I just immediately... I mean, it's on my also-rans, but this is definitely disturbing.
Goddamn, it's a great song.
3-6 so Mafia. Terrence Howard sings this version, but the radio hit, the one that everyone knows, was 3-6 Mafia. So hence why I went with Crazy Thangs.
Oh, another reason why I don't have it on my list is because it was already on my top five favorite movie bands.
Oh, really? DJ and featuring Suge?
That's correct.
Yeah,
correct.
DJ is Terrence Howard. Suge is Taraji P. Henderson. Hustle and Flow is the movie. For some reason, Anderson, this movie was on my list of top five movies I never, good movies I never want to see again.
Why?
No, it was an honorable mention. Honorable mention. I would totally watch this again.
It's a great movie.
I was thinking.
Black Snake Moan, same thing.
Never seen that.
Taylor. Richard Taylor. What's his name? Taylor Hackford.
Samuel.
Taylor Hackford directed both of those.
Enjoy this for a second.
What an Oscar. Right? Mafia won an
Oscar. This was the first hip-hop song performed by at the Oscars. First hip-hop group to win an Oscar.
What was the joke that was sold at the Oscars by whoever was hosting that year? You're kind of an idiot savant sometimes. And 3-6 Mafia won this award, and then whoever was hosting said, 3-6 Mafia, one Oscar, and then some giant name person, zero.
Zero or something like that. Maybe. God damn, what a song.
Okay. All right.
Let's listen to the rest.
In the interest of brevity, let's move forward with the inevitable.
Okay. Number one for you.
Number one for me.
Let's hear it.
It's anyone who's heard. I would bet there's a number of people who listen to 20 minutes of this program, and it's in some strange circumstance and chain of events, they're forced to listen to all of this one. They might be able to guess what my number one is.
Okay.
That's how obvious. God, I feel like you and the robot shit.
Ironically, my choice this for feels category.
Horrible. This feels terrible. How do you do this
How's
so
it
often?
Feel? How's it feel?
Oh, Brian, you just looked away. I just felt bad. You looked away. Oh, that was horrible. I'm sorry. I apologize.
Let's hear the song.
It's a small dick the man has. Very small. Now, I picked the actual title song, Hedvig and the Angry Inch. The Angry Inch is the name of the song. Because the performance is more true to what the spirit of what we're doing here, I thought. This is of all the ones that the band performs in Hedvig and the Angry Inch, this is the one with the most energy and anger and hostility, and all the people in the audience were actually very, for the most part, either very upset with him and grossed out and like homophobic, or he had a bunch of people that, because I'm talking about Hedvig and the Angry Inch, 1999.
And not The Origin of Love. You like this one better?
But The Origin of Love is my favorite music song ever made.
Okay.
Ever made, bro.
Wow.
I'm giving a William Shatner, so.
But
it's not so much. It starts out as a performance, but if you remember, it goes into animation. Plus, I've already had it on my animation.
Right.
And you know, the reason why I left Hedvig off as one of my favorite movie bands was because it was too obvious. Okay. But here I am, I'm lost, and I love music.
No, but this is a solid choice. This is a hit. I mean, this is one of his songs. This is one of his popular songs. This isn't like a musical where a character is singing their emotions. Like, this is a song he wrote and performs.
Well, the storyline is this Hedvig and his band follow this guy named Tommy Gnosis, who is a huge bona fide star. Like, he's a big, and he plays all these hits, but they're songs that he stole from Hedvig. So they always make sure that they follow him on tour and play in little, they're always nautical themed seafood fast food joints that are in the same town. It's supposed to be a chain, I guess. And they always play like
That's
down
right.
the street from
That's
giant
like
arenas where Tommy Gnosis is playing. Tommy Gnosis is played by Michael Pitt of...
Didn't he write and direct this movie too?
Yes. So the band, I should say, is made up of John Cameron Mitchell, who also wrote and directed it. He plays Hedvig Robinson.
That's what I meant.
One of the band members, Skzip, is also is played by Steven Trask, who actually wrote all the lyrics and the songs, which is as impressive, if not more impressive, than the movie. The soundtrack of this movie is equal, if not better, than the movie, and that says a lot because I love this movie. You know what I mean? So it's a perfect blend. It's a great, great endeavor, and I love the fact that Hedvig and the Angry Inch exists. It's all about a botched. Sex change.
Transition.
Yeah, transition. Hey, I wonder why if it's bigger now than it ever has been. Because
it should have a comeback.
Hashtag Jenner.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it already did. Doogie Howser was playing him on Broadway not too long ago.
Tay Diggs is going to be the next Hedvig. You see that?
What? Really?
Tay Diggs.
Oh, that's cool because the black community is not a big
I saw a picture of him in full on makeup and everything.
Wow.
Yeah.
On stage?
I saw the picture on Facebook. No, it was like a publicity shot.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't think Tay Diggs would do something like that. That makes me like Tay Diggs.
90% sure.
That much more.
You'll look that up later.
You know who'd be better?
What's that?
Mike Tyson.
That'd be pretty sweet.
It's a bit of stunt casting, but...
Yeah. You can change lyrics to like Skullduggery.
Skullduggery. You find anything for Tay? It's a stage.
For the stage one?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
No, don't worry about it.
Let's worry about it, because if it's like Omar Epps, I'm going to call you a racist and enjoy myself.
Oh, shit. We're going to cut that out. Oh, it's Tyrese Gibson.
It's Kevin Hart.
Yeah, no, it is Tay Diggs.
Hey, look at that. Good for you.
No racist. Woo. All right, ready with my song, Logan? Anderson, this is a song by a character named Joan Eleven. Controversial for a couple reasons.
Dude, if you say controversial again, all right? You know what I mean?
1980.
Oh, wait a minute. I just thought of my number one.
Yeah, that wasn't it.
Paul Dano sang it. 12 Years a Slave.
Oh, no. No. That was it.
Kidding. I was trying to think of the most controversial pick. Could you keep selling this one?
The controversy is for a couple reasons. Number one, my number one song, I've never seen the movie.
This offends me on so many levels.
I knew there was
this offends me on so many levels.
I've never seen One Trick Pony. You ever heard of One Trick Pony?
No one has.
One Trick Pony is a movie written and starring Paul Simon.
Paul Simon's heard of it.
Paul Simon has heard of it. I think he likes to forget
Garfunkel's
it.
Never even heard of it. You know
I would consider it obscure, and the reason I would consider it semi-obscure is because, number one, Netflix doesn't even list it at all. You can't even like do the thing where it's like save. God. Like, no, doesn't even list it.
Who's the hipster now, kids?
Can I stream it? Doesn't even show results. Like, nothing comes up.
Is this a real thing?
You can stream it on Vimeo, but why? Rotten Tomatoes literally has zero reviews for it. Although Roger Ebert had 3.5 stars out of 4. So there's that to consider.
Is that real?
Yeah, his review is real. I've read it.
How does he see?
Paul Simon plays Joan Eleven, and this is a semi-autobiographical movie about a one-trick pony, a former folk singer who is now trying to sort of come back in the pop world, or right. the rock, the pop.
But he can't. Old dog, new tricks, all that cliched shit. How do you know about the song? That's what's more important.
This is one of my, I'm not exaggerating, this is one of my all-time top 50 favorite songs. This is a great, great song. It was a big hit. It was at least a radio hit back in the day, which is funny because the movie is obscure. Let's hear a little bit of the song.
One Trick Pony. What year is this thing?
1980. This is late in the evening.
So far, not bad.
It's a great song.
Sounds like a commercial for Doritos at the beach or something.
Song Ginger Lake.
Sounds familiar.
Was it hit?
Oh, you know what? It sounds like Of Montreal. Ooh, this is very Of Montreal. Brian, you're onto something.
Some fucking rules. Solo Paul Simon does not get his due as some great, great songs.
I could,
this is a funky Jew.
Hey, Brian, you're ruining things. Did you say funky
First
Jew?
Thing I remember, I was lying in my bed. Couldn't have been no more than one or two.
I love this song.
I think you might have performed this on SNL.
Probably did.
And I remember there was a radio coming from the room next door. My mother laughed the way some ladies.
This plays over for the opening credits, but it's obviously one of Joan Eleven's songs, one of his hits.
Yeah, Brian, controversial indeed.
Have not seen the movie. Don't plan on seeing the movie.
Why don't you plan on seeing the movie? Why would you not want to see the movie? Look at me.
I skimmed through it today on Vimeo. No interest. No interest.
What is that? What? Hey, so the entire thing's up on Vimeo. Stop playing air drums.
I'm playing air bongos.
Brian, stop it.
Sorry, I am.
What? It's on Vimeo and you could... How long is it?
So like an hour and a half.
You couldn't do.
Didn't want to give my time.
Give your time.
I will listen. I'll listen to this
you
song.
You sit
five
around
times
all day.
I listen to this song 10 times in a row.
You could have righted this wrong with 90 minutes. You understand that?
Huh?
Especially if it's streaming and everyone could watch it. It could be a hidden little gem.
That's a funky white guy.
All right, Brian. Like, don't you want to see the... So it's just only used for the opening credits.
Yeah.
And you're assuming that his character... This is one of his character songs.
Because it's the opening song in the soundtrack album, and all the songs are from the movie. The songs he performed
he never actually
his character's
performs
catalog.
Performs.
He has a more controversy. Dig the horns!
Trumpets are ruining everything. I've actually literally taken the headphones off. Can't deal with it.
Put them on!
No.
Logan, pause it. Don't pause it.
Fucking horns. Goddamn horns. You guys have no place in good music. None. And all you listeners who play the brass and little spittoons and with a sad face right now, I'm not talking to you. You guys do your own jazz thing.
Bum, 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 bum.
It's fucking horns.
Put the headphones back on. It's over.
Yeah, that's reactionary because I grew up in the 80s loving certain songs. Many certain songs were saxophones. Ruins!
Sully.
This is a stinging.
Just trying to enjoy my Duran Duran, and all of a sudden,
stings.
Fucking sax full solo. No place in.
I know you like to default to no, but this is a pretty great song.
Well, fuck you, Brian.
What?
How did the entire thing open up? I was explaining how much I liked it.
That's true. All
right. Trumpets had to ruin. I like it. I do like it. All right. I mean, you.
Right, we can take it down now.
Oh, the perfect timing with those goddamn Trumps. Fuck you.
Oh, so great. I really love that song. And really, no plans on seeing the movie.
You're an idiot. Especially if it's all like songs that might be like that. There could be other songs.
No, I know the album. My parents had the actual vinyl back in the day, and that's how I discovered the song. Mm-hmm. And
once again,
there's a couple
example.
Of decent songs on there, but that's the best song by far.
My dad used to listen to a lot of Herb Albert. Didn't make me a Herb Albert fan.
Herb Albert's great.
No, terrible.
It's Alpert.
I don't give a fuck.
And the Tijuana Brass.
Fuckert. Okay.
Oh, he's a USC guy, like your wife. She's a USC guy.
Pretty sure that I was dragged to see him live at the Hollywood Bowl when I was a child.
You should be so lucky.
Maybe this is where the trumpet hatred comes from.
Oh, Herb's
Maybe
great.
I got fiddled while watching that.
Oh, my God. I'll be right back, Dad. I'm going to go to the bathroom.
Maybe. I have a strong...
Fine, you okay? You spent a half hour in the bathroom.
Negative reaction.
I'm fine.
Brian.
Sorry.
Trumpeted. Hey.
Trumpeted. Rusty trombone.
At the town that dreads sundown.
All right, let's hear the listener top
Violent
one.
Violent trumpet
damn,
scene.
I'm in a good mood right now.
Brian.
All right, number 5. Always Look on the Bright Side of Life from Monty Python's Life of Brian.
Is that performed in the song, in the movie?
I haven't seen that movie in a really long
such
time.
Such a confusing criteria.
I was going to say, Logan, based on what we were talking about, how well did the listeners do?
They did pretty
well. It was confusing.
Well.
It was admittedly
They did pretty well. I guarantee that the other four are original
okay.
songs performed in the movie.
Beautiful.
But, you know, alternatively, if you don't accept that one, you got also have, I didn't include it because it's a cover song technically, but Singing in the Rain from A Clockwork Orange.
Or, he does sing.
That does not count.
He uses his vocals.
Or also Johnny B. Goode from Back to the
that
Future.
That also is a cover song. It's a Chuck yes. Berry song. You know what? Those are all okay choices.
Hey, it's a very different version. The Clockwork, Little Alex's version is so different.
He makes it his own.
That it's almost like Sid Vicious's I Did It My Way.
That's right.
Number 4, I Love You All by Frank.
Oh.
Never heard of it. What is that?
Number 3, That Thing You Do.
It's only number 3?
Yeah.
I'm very surprised.
Number 2, I Am a Man of Constant Sorrow from Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
I almost just threw that on there with Mr. Kennedy because you know, they're both Coen Brothers creations.
Yep.
Both folk song. Folk
both
songs.
Folky, yeah.
Both folk.
But I didn't want to step on your toes in case you had it on there.
I didn't have a,
it's a great song. It's my favorite thing about that whole movie. I'm not a big fan of that that Old Brother Where Out There because George Clooney took over that movie. It's more Clooney than it is Coen. It's not the side that I want.
Was that the last time they worked together?
I don't know. I think it might
Burn After Reading.
Was he in that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's a very forgettable movie.
I like the movie.
Yeah, I've heard that
the Brad Pitt performance saves it.
You got to go back and see it again to enjoy it, but... He's the one who started fucking with him with the Intolerable Cruelty. It's like, hey, George, go do your own thing. Leave the Coen Brothers alone. Yeah. How about that?
Make your own monument.
George, go talk about things floating in space like you're fucking Buzz Lightyear.
Number 1.
Sorry.
And the number 1 song performed in a film is Scotty Doesn't Know from Europe.
Yeah!
Good choices. You want to hear some also-rans? Because goddamn, I wanted to put these on the list so bad, but some had to get bumped. I really like, you know what a song I love is Grow Old With You from The Wedding Singer. Did I get some votes for top 5?
That is good.
Yeah, that's a good one.
That brings tears.
Black Sheep from Scott Pilgrim from, was it something at the disco? The
Panic of the
Carnage. Oh,
the Metric.
It's Panic.
No, it was the, it's Alison Brie's band.
The Matrix.
Yeah.
Logan, you're being put on the spot because it's your favorite thing.
Metric performs the song.
Gotcha.
I don't know.
Something at the
Clash of Demonhead.
Thank you very much. Good call. Blues Hammer. Oh, I've talked about Blues Hammer before from Ghost World. No one mentioned Spinal Tap. Big Bottom, Cups and Cakes.
Because we
all
have smart
stuff.
Listeners.
That's right.
Yeah.
Fever Dog, Stillwater, of course, from Almost Famous. Stillwater needs to get mentioned. I didn't mind the Danny Collins song. Hey, baby doll, what's going on? It's not on my list.
It does not belong on the list.
Love Actually, Christmas is All Around Us.
Oh, that's
all around.
All right, my number 4, right there, bang, bang. How did Christmas
is all around?
Wasn't that a real song though?
It was from a previous, Richard Curtis movie, which is Love Is All Around Us. Wasn't that from
about a boy or something, or words and music or lyrics. It's from one of those Hugh Grant movies.
Feel it in my toes.
And Forgiveness from Just Friends. Forgiveness.
Yes.
More than saying sorry.
I meant to do this earlier, but way back when we did the top five movie bands, Sexual Chocolate was my number five.
Yes, but they sing a cover song.
Fuck You Yankee Blue Jeans.
That's right.
With the song Berserker, which would definitely have probably made its way onto this list.
Good call.
Berserker, would you like to make some fuck berserker?
My love for you is like a truck.
Number three was DJ from Hustle and Flow. Number two was the Cantina Band.
Or Star Wars?
Or Figrin Dion and the Model Nodes, yeah. I can't believe I allowed myself to Drooping put that on the there, but it belongs.
Drooping McCool's on clarinet.
I don't like you to talk about things.
He's on woodwinds.
And then my number one was all the bands from the Velvet Goldmine, Venus and Furs, Wild Rats, nice. Ulcerans, boom, bang, hey.
Those are my Ulcerans.
Yeah, Wild Stallions. Had a song.
Yeah, they didn't have any songs though, did they?
Nightmare River Band almost got on the list. Almost
River Bottom
on.
Band.
River Bottom.
Or Rotten Nightmare Band. Is that what it's called?
It's the Nightmare. It's the
River
Nightmare.
Bottom Nightmare Band. Isn't that what you made me watch that movie?
Yeah, I know. I'm forgetting the name right now because I get them confused with the Soggy Bottom.
I thought it was the River Bottom Nightmare Band.
It could be. Yeah, because they're from River Bottom and they are the Nightmare Band. So they're just the Nightmare Band, but I think because they come from the... Talking about the Muppets movie, Emmett's and
Emmett
his
Otter.
Jug.
Emmett
and his jug and what... I'm forgetting Sarah Marshall's Inside of You was pretty hilarious. That was similar to Scotty Doesn't Know, but not as good.
Okay.
Right? Do you remember?
Which
when
one?
He's up there singing Inside of You to Wait. Sarah Marshall and poor fuckhead, poor Siegel has to watch...
I wish there was a little more.
And
memorable.
Jonah Hill is like standing right there. I just watched it on YouTube the other day. Mm. It was hilarious. It was hilarious. Inside of You. And then the Fifth Element, that operatic alien chick. That was pretty sweet. Mm. That was pretty great. She was like doing octaves that like humans can't get to.
Oh, yeah.
And all the people were there. Remember? And then she got killed. Sorry. And then Power Mad, but they're playing themselves in a movie that seems to come up more often than more episodes than not. Wild at Heart. Love it. Continue to love it. Mm. Power Mad.
There's a Blue Velvet reference in Me and Earl Dying Girl.
There was. I know. There's a lot of great references in that movie. A lot of great references.
Let's gamble.
Last week, you gambled on Dope.
How much Werner Herzog was in that movie?
A lot of
he
Werner.
Was all over the
a lot
place.
Of Werner.
Loved it. And they picked some of his greatest lines from that movie. But really, literally, honestly, that movie, Burden of Dreams, the documentary about Fitzcarraldo. You can pretty much pipe in. I've done it. Like you just go to a random spot, almost like religious people do with Bibles,
right?
And you're gonna land on Werner saying something amazing.
Really?
Like I remember I was doing it. I think on the After Disaster, and I was just playing it because I was streaming for a while. And like the right when we stop, he's and the spiders are raining down on us like rain. It's just great.
Okay.
Watch Werner.
All right. We'll do.
Okay. Sorry.
All right. At the time, Dope's Rotten Tomato score was 93%. Anderson bid 88, and Brian bid 89.
One point above. What are we doing?
Second week in a row.
Now, the week after its release, the Rotten Tomato score for Dope has dropped to 89%.
What?
Am I exactly
Brian
right?
The Woo! Exact winner.
Wait, on this. What's amazing about that is I was thinking I got to sign Logan a movie. We're just talking about a movie you haven't seen. What were we just talking about? We're just talking about something.
One Trick Pony.
I'm not going to make easy One Trick Pony. What's on my list?
You're going to make me see a movie?
Well,
yeah, well, when he nails it.
I think that's if it's a tiebreaker, if it's in between you
no,
two.
No, I think if I get it exactly right.
If someone gets it exactly
no,
right.
No, if it's in between, you get to assign us a movie.
Oh. And then if you get it exactly right,
has that ever happened?
Me?
Has it ever happened?
I feel like you did assign us a movie one time because we fell right
directly
Pool
Hall Junkies.
That's exactly what it was.
Fucker.
I didn't know. I get assigned a movie, though, if you get it exact.
Yeah. I'll try and find
Burden of Dreams. That was when Werner.
Assign me Chappie because I'm going to watch that tonight. That's convenient for me.
That's not a good way. That's not the way you play. You got to use more manipulation.
That's not how you play the game.
All right. You want to gamble on this week's?
Sure.
Hey, right, this crimes.
This week, you're going to be gambling on Ted 2.
Ooh.
Actually, you know what?
What? Do you know the number?
No.
Why are you giggling?
Because I'm just doing that manipulation mind fuck thing. Hearing great things.
Feel like you know things. Feel like you know things.
I don't know shit. Honestly, I opened my phone today and I saw the little Ted poster, and I'm like, must not. Turned off. Swear to God, that happened. I have no idea. Do it. You looked. I feel like you just looked.
Oh, no, I'm looking.
I saw your eyes darting.
I'm looking. Like, no, I already have a number written down.
All right. Well, let's do it.
I'm looking at. Oh shit! I put the wrong thing. Fuck. Sorry. I have 52.
50.
No!
What's going on?
This close.
What's happening?
To being third week in
Wait,
a row.
Wait, were you just looking up what the score was?
No, I'm looking at my documents.
Like you were just looking.
I'm looking at documents to look for a movie to assign to.
I was watching him. He's fine.
Okay. Good. Thank you, Logan.
Keep an eye on him.
My documents are on RottenTomatoes.com.
What's the score?
All right. Currently, the week before its release, with 36 reviews, Ted 2's Rotten Tomatoes score is 44%.
Nice. Feels good.
Could go either way.
Feels good. No, it's not going on.
It's not going either way.
No, all the people that are big McFarlane fans have already
They've already seen it?
Yeah.
Okay.
But I think even McFarlane fans aren't that excited for this one.
The problem with these kinds of movies is, and I've said it before, but like a lot of time these comedies, all the jokes that weren't good enough to make the first one now get put into this one. You know what I mean? So you just get a lot of like second-tier jokes, second-tier bits, and they try and do more over the top. I can only imagine how over the top you're going to have to go with this one, considering the last one with all of the filth. Ted is coming again, Brian.
Yes.
I see him beating off on many corners.
I'm torn.
Just do it, Brian. Come on.
There's a really great movie I want to make you watch, and I'd like to make Logan watch it if he hasn't seen it.
Time. Let's go.
You're fine. Logan, have you seen The Devil Wears Prada?
No, I have not.
Oh. It's going to be a great week. And the reason is, Anderson's going to default to no because he hates me, but you're of sound mind, and you'll be able to tell him.
I hate you, buddy.
He hates my choices. You both have to watch The Devil Wears Prada. That's a great movie. I'm assigning you a very good movie.
Settle down. Is it streaming?
I think it's
somewhere?
Nominated for an Oscar.
I doubt it.
It was a screenplay Oscar.
Yeah. Is it streaming somewhere?
We better find out.
Mm-hmm. It was actually already on my queue, so I just got to bump
Why?
It up to the top now.
Would it be on your queue?
I've heard it's a good movie.
It is a really good movie. Tucci's fantastic.
Okay. Yeah. Hey, you know what I don't like that's going on in this episode? Is you really leaning on that Anderson defaults to no. Because if something's good, I don't hold it against. I'm able to separate you from movies, thank God. You know what I mean?
Thank goodness.
Yeah.
Because God knows what the show would be if you didn't.
Netflix thinks I'm going to like it 2 stars.
Netflix is dumb. Really? Oh, that's dumb.
I've heard things, Brian.
You've heard things?
I think you're off here.
About Devil Wears Prada?
You're off sometimes.
That's an undeniably good... What's the Rotten Tomato score on that? Look it up real quick.
I bet it's 67.
I'll bet it's over 70.
67.
It might be 80.
I don't have a phone, so...
That's a solid movie, man.
Right.
75%.
Yeah.
And consider what it has going against it. It's called The Devil Wears Prada. It's about...
Based on a book, right?
Yeah, it is based on a book. Oh, dude. Right. Was it nominated for an Oscar?
Yeah, I've seen clips and I've seen the trailer numerous times. It looks very just paint by numbers.
It's not.
Paint by numbers.
Oh, the scenes with her and her. Adrien Grenier is the fucking worst. God, he's her boyfriend. But everything else aside from him is great.
Have you seen the trailer for the Rocker movie?
The Rocker movie?
Where she's a rocker? Have you seen that?
In Hathaway?
Yeah.
No, I have not.
American Ultra. Is that the name of that one with Jesse Eisenberg coming out?
I have no idea.
We read like Green Light edit with Diana Van Camp a couple weeks ago, and Jesse Eisenberg plays like a stoner who gets activated by Manchurian Candidate.
Okay.
He's like a double agent, or he's like a trained assassin. It looks fucking
really? American Ultra.
American Ultra, okay. Yeah. I saw a trailer for it. The trailer, I don't recommend seeing it because it gives way too much away like trailers do, but I couldn't look away. I look away from trailers or I just do my own thing on my phone or something.
Okay.
This looks funny. It looks like Pineapple Express, but more clever.
I'm in.
Topher Grace is chasing him. Jesse Eisenberg.
Topher Grace should be in more movies. I'm all over that.
I believe we both red-lit it when Diana
means it's great.
Pitched it, but this looks like it could be really fun.
Yeah.
American Ultra.
Thank you guys for listening. Thanks also. Let me call up here exactly who I'm supposed to thank. Oh, it's a... damn it.
Fuck you, Yankee Blue Jeans.
Thank you, Yankee Blue Jeans. Joe Cher. I should just set it off the top there. No, that's good stuff. That's a listener wrote this week.
I'm confused.
Look at what it says.
Is that you on the left, Brian?
That's me. That's you. That's...
Brian has like a beard, though. That's pretty well done. Yeah, I like it. So they're all different TV shows?
Yeah.
Is that what's going on there?
It's Breaking Bad, Walking Dead, and Mad Men.
I like it. Yeah. It was hard because I was looking at the side of like the pixelated screen. It was tough to see. Logan
looks the best. Thanks, Joe Cherry, for the fantastic fan art. Go to AndersonandBrian.com if you'd like to see it and you want to comment on our episodes. If you want to get information on our featured artists this week, they were The Shakers, War Eye, The Sound, Objective, Social Set, 5880,
and Tyler Scruggs. Thanks, you guys, for being our featured artist this week. Check us out on the social networks. We're Facebook.com, Twitter, at The Film Vault on both. The Film Vault on both. Anderson, your short film was fantastic. I really enjoyed
it. Yeah, thanks to everyone for coming out. I hope it was good.
I reserve the right to change that if it sucked.
I hope that everyone enjoyed themselves for everyone who came out. We're recording this a day before the actual day that the thing's coming, but...
Are you taking the night off work? Did you take the night off work?
I kind of had to because it was like a Q&A. Yeah. And if it wasn't the Chinese theater, there's no way I'd be... But it's just that since it's the Chinese theater, I'm letting myself kind of enjoy majesty. It. You know what I mean?
Logan, were you there last night?
I tried to make it out.
Okay.
I may make it out.
Okay.
He may have made it out.
I may have made it out.
But there's going to be another one September 26th, which is going to be much more intimate, and it's not going to be with all these other douchey films.
Oh, gotcha. Can you get details on AndersonGowan.com?
Soon. Not yet. I'm not selling eventually. Tickets yet, but I'll make them available.
Dates and times. And.
Right now, it's still the... I don't know. AndersonGowan.com will have some stuff over there.
Eventually.
Move it. I really like the next two that I got going here. The one about Carano and the one about the blind guy that gets the wrong dog. I actually like these movies. It's rare that I like something I make. So
I'll greenlight them tentatively. Thanks again, you guys. We appreciate it. And until next time,
we do it for Bango.
Guys, quick favor, if you have the time and the inclination, you have a little bit of spare time, a couple free minutes. If you could, do us a favor, go to podcastone.com and take the listener survey they're doing there. They want to survey all the listeners of all their podcasts and, I guess, figure out their listening habits and all the stuff that surveys do. It would help us, I guess, if you want to say, hey, we're listening to the Film Vault over there. And podcastone.com is where you go. O-N-E. Podcastone.com is where you go and take the survey. It would help us out a little bit. Thanks, you guys. We appreciate it. Thank you for your support.